Okay, this is the Marysville Board of Education regular meeting of October 27th, 2011. Can I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Mayby.
Here.
Ms. Greer.
Here.
Ms. Fraker.
Here.
Ms. Foster.
Here.
And Mr. Freudenberg is currently absent. Will you please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. Next up is the adoption of the agenda. There is one item to add on there. Well, actually, there's an addendum on your back page, I guess. For item 21, there's an A and B, the employee district staff. And then also under 5, there'll be a 5-1-A. Our finance committee is going to present tonight. The special ed subcommittee is presenting tonight. So if you'd add that. And that is it. There's no questions or comments. I need a motion to approve that, then, please.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Ms. Laster.
Yes.
Ms. Greer.
Yes.
Ms. Fraker.
Yes.
Ms. Mayby.
Yes. Motion carries. Okay. Next up, employee of the month.
Christian. Coming up. Christian Blevins is a district network tech for us. Puts out a lot of brush fires on the computers and answers help desk calls and anything else that occurs throughout the district. In and out of classrooms, and for these guys to get this type of recognition, because they're constantly in and out of places, and sometimes they don't always solve the issues right away, but they're doing their very best. So that's the and some days they're pretty overwhelmed also. But people think a lot of what they do, and especially Christian, and we want to acknowledge you tonight.
All right, I move that we accept Christian Blevins as the September 2011 Employee of the Month.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mayden.
Yes.
Ms. Fraker.
Yes.
Ms. Greer.
Yes.
Ms. Laster.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up is the Curriculum and Assessment Department. Our excellent Curriculum and Assessment Department.
I don't have your new glasses on.
I'm not breaking
up. You're so stunning.
I do agree.
And you won't run into things.
No, I still will.
She was modeling her new glasses.
Yeah.
They had to pick them out. They had to pick them out for her.
I'm just not going to. Yvonne and I thank you for the opportunity to be able to share with you this evening. We thought it would be a good time to bring the board and our guests up to speed with where we are with the state's comprehensive education plan. As you all know, we started last year to get ready for all the changes that are coming down the pipe, and we have been going full tilt this year in starting with professional development and getting everything ready to go. One of the biggest things that we're working with right now is standards. As you know, the state adopted new Common Core standards, which are national standards in language arts and math, and have newly revised standards in science and social studies. This has been a big change for all of us, and we're just in the process of really doing a comparative analysis between the old standards, the new standards, and what we need to have in place by 2014-15. So we are in our third year, or our first year, and three more years to go. So we call this one down, three to grow, because we have 1 year under our belt with this transition, and there are three more to go. We're going to also ask Juliet Blitzel to jump in, especially as we make connections to Race to the Top. We have been working in concert with a lot of our departments, a lot of our fellow colleagues in different groups, and one is the Race to the Top too. As I mentioned, the state is putting together an integrated education system, which is the what, the how, and how well we're going to do standards and assessment down the line. The state adopted the Common Core and State Revised Standards in June of 2002, so those are definite.
2002 is the old one.
Thank
2010.
And
you want your red glasses?
I do. I'm trying to get used to glasses, and I can't see yet. Anyway, those are mandated. We're ready to go with those. The model curricula was developed and was adopted by the state in March of 2011. The alignment of the assessments that will accompany all of that will come along in 2014, and those are under development now. So again, the timeline for the mandates that we have coming from the state are right there. Right now, we're in the 2011 to 2014 stretch. We are working with teacher development, our curriculum revisions, and also getting ready for the new assessments that will be coming down the line. With the state standards, as I mentioned, the Common Core are in English, Language, Arts, and Math, and we're using the Ohio Revised Standards in Science and Social Studies. As you'll see, those are the new features of the standards and the new focus, which is a huge focus on college and career readiness, and also looking at these standards with coherence, focus, rigor, and fidelity. And I'm not going to read all these to you, but just so you know, in the English language arts area, there's a big shift from nonfiction to fiction in both reading and writing.
Fiction
to nonfiction. And especially that begins at kindergarten.
In fact, up through high school, it's going to end up being like in grades 11 and 12, 70% nonfiction to 30% fiction. I mean, that's a shift. And it's not just within the English language arts, it's across the curricular areas that science, social studies, all the teachers are supposed to help with the teaching of reading, within their content area.
What is it now?
Right now, a lot of the classes are pretty traditional, I would say maybe 50-50, because of just some of the English classes and what they choose to read. They use a lot of fictional, Shakespeare, those kind of things. And I mean, a lot of colleges still want kids with a background like that, but this is an issue that, doing that shift.
And nonfiction is hard.
And even the idea, on some of these new assessments, they will be more geared towards real-life pieces. Like there's in the Appendix B of this particular, the Common Core for English Language Arts, they have exemplary texts, and you can see some samples. It doesn't mean you have to go out and throw out everything in your library to get those texts, but they have to be those same type of readability levels, or lexile levels, the same genres, same themes. So they have some on there. There's one that's a government manual, because kids, they will have to, taxes and things like that. So those are pieces that will have to go in there.
And if you think about our daily life, our lives will revolve around nonfiction, reading and writing. So, and also that whole idea of teaching literacy skills. This is a big shift, especially at the high school level, because it will be teaching literacy through those content areas of history, social studies, science, and tech. So oftentimes high school teachers may not consider themselves reading or literacy teachers, but in fact, we all are, K through 12. But there's even a bigger emphasis about
all looking back at the text, where does it show? Where can you corroborate that this is in the text? Not just guessing, but where is this? And comparing cross texts, and maybe looking at different websites, and is that a site that, are you a discerning, consumer of these websites? Just because it's the first thing that pops up, it may not be a reputable site, hasn't been vetted. All those pieces will have to be different.
In math, big, big focus on problem solving, critical thinking, reasoning, and not only in math, but those type of skills across all areas. So you're going to see a lot of hands-on, a lot of numeracy, a lot of understanding of number sense. In science.
Real quick, does that change? I mean, we do a lot of that everyday math and stuff like that. Does that shift all of that out the door?
Not out the door, no. As a matter of fact, we'll explain later. Kindergarten through second grade moved into Common Core standards in math this year. We are still using everyday math. We picked up their addition for the Common Core, but we're seeing not a lot of difference. What we're seeing is how teachers are facilitating that instruction in their classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So we've started PD with our teachers to make sure that they have that deeper understanding that all of this necessitates.
Okay.
But resources are going to be a factor in
I assume so.
Yeah. In science, of course, scientific inquiry, constructivism, a lot of hands-on, a lot of deep research, deeper understanding. And of course, you hear a lot about STEM with the technological design and engineering. In the area of science, Ohio is one of 20 states that has been selected to really lead the national standards work in science. We're glad that we're at the table because we have state revised standards right now. So we're caught in limbo. You know, we have our state standards, but we probably, being one of the 20 states developing these standards, will move to those new standards. As a result, we're trying to have all of the resource materials training for our folks in place with both in mind. And that's kind of a hard line to walk right now, especially for our teachers. But we are at the table. We're hoping that they're going to take our revised standards as they do all those discussions, and we'll be pretty much on target. In social studies, a more comprehensive curriculum that really promotes historical thinking, that whole idea of civic participation, and the items that you see below.
And the financial literacy piece isn't just for high school, it's embedded at the lower levels too, you know, that students have that knowledge, you know, and then of course our government classes will be kind of capstone with the financial literacy piece, also our business classes and family consumer science. We're actually using some of the Dave Ramsey things to fit for the bank. This year we got some of Dave Ramsey's materials. And so the business department and the family consumer science department at the high school are using some of those materials.
As you can see, Ohio's new standards inform all these different areas. These are all areas that we are now putting plans in place or have already started to work plans in these areas. That's what I mentioned about working with Race to the Top. None of us can work in isolation. This really needs to be a systemic, systems perspective approach to what we're doing, because what one group is working on impacts everything else that we're doing. So Race to the Top, you will see, is working with standards and assessment. It's working with, Yvonne will talk about it more, with the teacher evaluation system.
The great teachers, great leaders.
Right, and our instructional information system. They have to mesh with everything on our OIP, our Ohio Improvement Plan. Curriculum has to be a very good match and a good alignment from kindergarten through 12th grade. We are also working with area preschool providers and home providers on helping preschool children be ready for kindergarten. So we're going out into the community to also start to help support these efforts. This is an example of a comparative analysis between the 2002 standards and the 2010 standards. This is in kindergarten. As you can see in science, the content that is going to be new to kindergarten, the content that is still included, but by all means is going to be a more deeper emphasis, will be modified to a greater depth, and the content that is no longer there and is placed at other grade levels. So if you look at the kindergarten material, some is going to second, some was formally in first or formally in second. It's even a bit more easy to see how some of the grade levels have switched. This is fourth grade social studies. If you look, some of the new content is coming from 11th grade. Some of the new content is coming from 8th grade. Some is going to 5th. 5th is coming to 4th. So what we're planning now is working with our transition teams, our department chairs, all of our teachers to determine where are our resources and how are we going to be able to use those in different, you know, in different grade levels. But if we have something in 8th grade going back down to 4th grade, the material is not going to be appropriate. So we see that resources is a huge area that is going to have to be considered. Teachers are already doing a great job of saying, you know, we have our inventory of this and that. We think this needs to go here and this needs to go there. But again, it's a coordinated effort to make sure that we're keeping a firm hand on our inventory and making sure that it's going in the areas we can to make sure that we are as cost saving as possible. Another thing is teacher professional development. There is a lot of training that is needed with the new standards and the new generation of assessment. Takes time, takes subs. We are doing everything we can to pull our teachers together to save, you know, as much money. But this is all going to mandate that we have even more groups of teachers engaged in training. Not only are the core content areas impacted, but world language. There's the timeline for it.
And that document is available. I know a couple of our teachers have kind of been involved. They're having public committees to look at the world languages and find on it. So.
Thank you. Sorry, you flipped back through that.
Oh. You notice, this is my part. I'm moving.
She's moving on.
So, no.
I'm going to move on
tonight. No.
Go ahead.
This is huge. The revision to dance, drama, music, and visual arts. If you will notice, SB 210 was signed in June 2010. It has four components that will be on our state report cards beginning in 2012-13. It won't be a factor in our performance ratings, but it still would be part of the report card. We have expert professionals coming in from professional organizations and ODE to work with our art, music, and PE folks on November 28th so they can get a better understanding of the performance assessments that they will be giving and also how they play into the whole factor of value added. Model curricula.
Okay. This is actually the teachable document that the teachers are using that really kind of fleshes out that framework for the standards. It really gives them specifically what do they mean, like at 7th, 8th grade, or whatever grade level. And then also for science and social studies, they have the misconception piece, right? And that's a living, breathing document. I mean, you can't print it out, but it's going to be changed from year to year with updates and information from Ohio's teachers, as well as lead consultants. And, you know, with those, there'll be hot links in there to websites that, you know, will have to be continually updated that teachers can go to get some ideas and teaching strategies, that type of thing. This slide actually shows the Ohio Teacher Evaluation System, or Ohio Comprehensive Educator Accountability System. You're probably aware that when someone goes to college now, if they're going into the education world, they have to take a practice exam on the content, you know, and the pedagogy piece before they can graduate. And once they graduate, now this is the first year they have a four-year license. It's called a resident educator. It used to be called a mentees, you know, or you know, beginning teachers. Now it's called resident educator. Ohio has one of the strongest. I mean, Wisconsin has a two-year program. Some places have one. Ohio, this is the first year for a four-year. And what that means is during that 4 years, they're kind of on probation. They work with a mentor intensively the first year. In fact, I just had a mentor meeting. We don't, you know, have three new teachers that are new to the profession that are in this program, and then their three mentors. But they go through a program. The Ohio Department of Education has designed that program. And we have our piece, like I've got notebooks here for Marysville, you know, to just some of the things that are unique to Marysville. But we have those mandates that we have to follow from the state. So that's the middle tier, the resident educator. I know it's hard to see, but you can actually, on the ODE website, if you were to type in the search box, Ohio Teacher Evaluation System, you would be able to find this. And there's a huge manual with this, like 40-some pages. But then if you'll notice at the bottom, they talk about the OTES. That's the pilot that's going on right now. I know several of our teachers, more mills, well, actually there was one at Raymond, and I think somebody at PICU and somebody at the middle school, that was last year involved in the beginning of the Ohio Teacher Evaluation System, and there are some teachers this year that are different. And area schools are doing the same, you know, Ohio's taking model. And what they're doing is going through, you know, what would it look like with this new evaluation system and giving feedback. I mean, there have been people from the district that have gone to meetings. There's also Ohio principals evaluation going on, and a couple of our principals are working with that as well. So that's all part of this accountability system, you know, when it kicks in 2013-14. But this is kind of just an overview. We kind of put that up so you would be able to see that. Yes?
How do you become a mentor?
A mentor is someone in this district, we say you need at least 3 years of experience. Mm-hmm. You should have been recommended by your principal. There's also training that they need. For example, our people that are doing it now have had at least 5 to 20 years.
Okay.
Is one of them, and that particular person is a department chair, but they actually had to go to ODE-sponsored trainings. There was a 2-day training just on this new resident educator program that they go to, and hopefully, you know, they'll have that training, although it seems like every year there's always a booster shot training, especially with this being new, that they will probably have to go and at least get a one-day training to go through the forms and, you know, what it takes to work with an adult learner and those pieces and how to really mentor. You know, they're not an evaluator. They're someone to help that teacher, mm-hmm. you know, with pieces. So that's how they
Thank you.
The goals for the model curricula, if you were to go on, I know there was a little piece, you could actually go to the ODE website and, you know, go type in academic content standards, and then when you, whatever you selected on the left-hand side, you could look at English, language arts, math, science, social studies, or the other areas. But the 4 core academic areas, those are the ones that have the model curricula right now. And that, like I said, is the teaching piece that really gives you the specifics of what it is and some suggestions. So, you know, there's so the common understanding. So a teacher here versus a teacher in Olentangy or wherever, you know, they have that same idea. That's what they need. And those are also going to be the specs that the state uses when they create these assessments that are going to take place in 2014-2015. So then differentiated instruction is a huge piece. There's something called UDL in there. That means Universal Design for Learning. There's actually a site you can go to, it's called CAST, C-A-S-T, that has all that information. And what it does basically is looks at for special education population, what teachers can do to help differentiate the ELL, that's the new official term for English language learners. We don't really call limited English anymore in Ohio, it's ELL, English language learners. You know, what you can do to help them, and then gifted, those 4 tiers. And so that's one that's referenced quite a bit, the UDL, Universal Design for Learning. And then there's resources that are on there with those links. Content elaborations, I kind of talked about those. They're in social studies. The expectations for learning are basically, you know, you could turn those into learning targets, you know, put them in student-friendly and parent-friendly language to help them understand, you know, what, so they can take ownership of what they're doing. We talked a little bit about the resources. You know, I told you about the UDL site for the diverse learners. Okay. And the misconceptions, again, that's more science and mathematics, and then they're calling them enduring understandings in the English language arts and social studies. And what enduring understandings, that just means what are those core things that by the time they finish that American history course or English course, what are those main pieces that they really need to know? That's what the enduring understandings are. And this is kind of model curricula. It's a huge document. I mean, there's 770. If you took all the grade levels, they have it split up from K all the way to 12. There's like 774 pieces in there, and that will probably grow that teachers have access to. And they're clustered, you know, like for example, 8, 9, 10 would be clustered, 11, 12 are clustered. You can see how those are set up. Okay, the IIS is another piece of Race to the Top. Districts are just starting, and we've applied in our district to be a part of the pilot with the state with the IIS. And what that is, it's not one particular program, it's lots of pieces. Like the model curriculum is one of the pieces because they talk about electronic curriculum. The state has that there, so why not make use of that? Also, the other piece is some kind of district assessment website, which we have testing rooms. Of course, Aries, you know, has some of the state testing on there, but for formative assessments, which the state is requiring that we start, you know, having, and we do have, you know, some of the common assessments, those have to be housed locally. So those would be on something like our testing works. So that's a piece of it. There's formative assessment piece that would be, you know, that actually testing can house some of those, not only the data and the results from that, but also the test itself. So those are just the pieces of that IIS system, and then we're going to be learning more. We just did kind of a gap analysis to see what we currently have, all the components, versus what the state, and the state is still developing this. They're asking for feedback from districts.
So now that you're collecting all that data in a different way, what are you going to do with it?
Well, that's a whole other piece of that, you know, making that so accessible that teachers can just scroll right down, you know, very quickly once an assessment is. Look to see.
So if I'm a teacher, I could go in there and find my student, what they
when
did on my
test.
I know, yeah, I didn't mean
yeah,
today.
Yeah,
but you know what
yeah.
I mean? I mean, it gets down to that
that's
level
right.
where I could get in there. And
you can get in there and see, you know, what they've done over the years, like literacy, you know, from the lowest grades. You know, if you're a middle school teacher, you could look in there. That's how this is designed. Or if you're a science teacher, social studies, like, this student's having a lot of problems. Where you can go on there and look, whoa, this is a reading level, or, you know, math kind of piece. That's the big picture. Everything's supposed to be aligned. So it's just a few clicks that a teacher would have access to the curriculum, assessment data for the student, you know, so it won't be like, oh, we have to go here, I've got this spreadsheet over here, you know, that's at least the goal.
So is the idea also that data will follow that student if they move to another
because
district?
Because of the SSID numbers, that, yeah. you know, specific student identification number.
Right.
It will follow in Ohio.
That's what I mean. I mean, if you go, you know, district to district around Ohio, you'll still be able to see their, you know,
and you can actually now link it to the name. As of a couple years ago, there was that issue of, you know, the privacy rights of the students, so you'd have this number, and then it'd be really hard to translate that to the student name. As of a couple years ago, they finally let us make the patch that those teachers don't know them by, you know, a six-digit number, you know, so you have to find out who is that student. But then you can actually group them by groups, you know, like free and reduced lunch students, you know, different ethnicities, you know, special education, so you could actually look at the population of your students.
Wow.
And this also affords our folks to have the data immediately. We're about midway point to making that happen. On our benchmark assessments at K-6, we're able to do that right now. Our formative assessments, we're hoping to get those built on the system beginning next week. So they can run student-level reports, classroom reports, grade-level reports, building reports, and we can look at it from a district perspective. So we're real pleased with that.
And also, you know, item analysis is easier than tallying things, you know, as you know, teachers have had to do, you know, that's the whole piece. To be able to really look at the standard, you know, when you do assessments and go, oh, this is the standard. You know,
it's also our intention to add grade cam to this so that our teachers will be able to run assessments through that. It will go immediately into testing works. Testing works will grade it, which will cut down on time for our teachers who desperately need more time. And
it's a small choice. Now if it was a written response, then they would have, the teacher would have to grade that, but then they could just code it like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and put that on there, and that would.
And we're making that available by selling a couple of our Scantrons that we had, so that way we can come back and use that money to buy the grade cam and upgrade our technology.
Is this hooked in the race to the top for the teacher evaluation?
This will be, for example, right now, K-3 or K-2, because the value added does not play in.
That's what I mean. I mean, how do you evaluate for?
Exactly. The assessments that we have in place, both the benchmark and formative assessments, are those type of assessments that can show growth over time. We've checked with all of our fellow districts, and the things that we have in place are a little ahead of the game. So yes, that can be used. We're going to work very, very closely with Juliet and her group, the OTES group that's going through the evaluation pilot right now, and we're putting all that in place so it's all there when we're ready to go.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the formative instruction models, these are just the web-based that are inside the model curriculum pieces that they, you know, can go to and look at those in the content specific. That's also going to flesh out that instructional improvement system. That's supposed to be a piece of it. Regional professional development, there are workshops right now. You know, Susie just said she tried to sign up for one in January, and she can't, you know, they're available. They're after school because Ohio knows the issue with substitutes and funding, but they've tried to set them up in pockets around the school, and I let the teachers know which ones were within 35 miles. Lewis Center has some, Arena has some, and I think Columbus ESC that's over there by the airport, you know, we're some others that teachers can go to in those four content areas, you know, science, social studies, English, language arts, and math, and learn. There's like a standards 101 that's like from now until the end of December, and then there's one getting more in depth in the standards that's going to run from January through May. So those are also regional offered ones that are in there. The Ohio's new generation of assessments, supposedly this coming week, they said by the 31st, which of course is Monday, the state was supposed to announce which of, there's two consortia that the state's been involved in with other states, and one of them, well, we'll have some slides here, the Smarter Balance and the PARC, and PARC is Partnership for Assessment of Readiness. The state is kind of courting both of these groups, they're with both, but I understand there's a deadline and they have to make a decision which one of those they're going with. You know, when the 43 states got together and worked on the Common Core in English, Language, Arts, and Math, they really did not make any kind of overtures to do anything with assessment. I know it's kind of backwards, you usually start with the end in mind, you do the assessment and the backup, but that didn't happen with this group because I think the colleges kind of pushed, they really wanted to have that, especially high school, college connection piece in there, and now this, they're working on the assessments, but these are the two, and as of, matter of fact, last week we went to a meeting, Ohio ASCD, and some of the consultants said they're still tweaking on what this is looking like. Because it, some of them, they're a little bit different. They're not just your traditional OGT and OAAs. Well, they'll be in that same grade band. OGT, you know, it's going to be some nationally normed test. Word was it was going to be ACT, but now rumor is that it may not be the ACT. So, you know, what's it going to be, SAT? Or is this consortia going to come up with some kind of high school test? So we don't know that yet. So hopefully, you know, maybe we will know by the end of this month in a couple of days.
Won't you have to get your universities to look at that as well?
That is a whole piece, and they do have university partners on there. Just like when they designed the standards, they had university partners, and that's part of this piece, too,
okay,
to look at that. And some states around us, as you know, have done the ACT and the
right,
some others, and, you know, some just have to take it. That's the other issue. Are you just going to have to take it? Are you going to set certain levels that you have to be at, you know? And you know, are taxpayers only going to pay for one time? Most states have done that, you know? And if the kid isn't college ready, are they just going to roll it off, not do any, you know, on this test? I mean, those are all issues. We've also talked, these are all going to be computerized, so there's the issue of that, how we're going to handle, you know, doing these.
Right.
Of course, it's 2014, 2015, and I've even heard some people say, wow, that's really ambitious, because now they're just starting to design some of the assessments, because they really haven't decided, but they're still have a company working on some of the assessments, because there'll probably be some multiple choice. But there's also going to be some unique pieces in there. They're going to have project-based learning, at least that's the hope, the vision. And some of those pieces are going to be pretty in-depth. I mean, the students, you know, they could do some artificial intelligence with experiments. They could have, you know, speakers and things like that. They have to do a virtual lab. But getting kids access to that and having, so they have daily or at least weekly practice with those kind of things. So it's not just, okay, here you are in front of a computer.
That's a real test, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And even word processing, you know, the writing one, the word processing piece. I mean, some kids will have problems with that, fine motor coordination or,
sure,
you know, tracking it with their eyes. Those are all issues, too. This is kind of just the assessment timeline. We told you 2014, 2015. This year's seventh graders will be the first to take these new assessments. This year's eighth graders will be the last to take the OGT.
And kindergarten, the first to take the new OAA.
Yeah, so even so, it says 2014, 2015, because I was confused, and there were several other people that I brought out in the meeting, and there were other people in the room that said, yeah, we were wondering that too. You know, which group exactly? Because we thought, well, is it just going to be, you know, after 2013, 2014, that everybody is, but mm-hmm, as of last week, the state folks from science and socially said, no, this year's eighth graders will be the last. And they'll offer it for a couple more years, and then after that, you know, if somebody doesn't meet that requirement, then whatever this assessment is, we'll have to, because we have a young lady right now, which is another 20, that's coming back this week, or next week, during OGT makeup, to take her OGT, and she was pretty amazed when we told her, no, the ninth grade test is gone, and her, when she was going to school, that was what it was, but so she has to take the OGT. At first she thought it was in all areas, and I'm like, no, you bank those others, you pass the, but, you know, that's probably going to be the same situation here, that those students that didn't graduate with their class will have to take that.
So, what does that mean for us right now? As you can tell from what we've shared with you tonight, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We could spend hours on each one of these components, and we really do invite you, as you have questions about these, or you want to know where you can research these more, please get a hold of us. We are now starting rollouts with teachers, different groups. We're using our department chairs to help with the rollout with that, our principals. a race to the top team. We're trying to bring everybody in that we can.
And there were some teachers, you know, in state aid that were involved in some summer work.
Yes.
You know, we were able to offer some Ashton credit with race to the top money to help defer the, you know, the Ashton credit cost where they can get a stipend. And they did quite a bit of curriculum alignment work, you know, the ones that were able to or wanted to. And they got a credit, you know, or two credits from Ashland. So that was good. So we hope to continue to do that. Because there's a lot of work. It's asking for teachers, you know, teaching all day, and then looking at this and having to think ahead because, you know, they still have students sitting in front of them that are going to be taking the current test and then thinking, okay, I've got to do this, but, you know, I've got to ratchet it up too. So those have been big issues. And also, she had mentioned November 28th waiver day. You'd be welcome. I mean, we're having Dr. Willard Daggett. He's world-renowned. Actually, he was here several years ago when Creekview first opened, and I think North Union brought him in and to give a perspective on, you know, what graduates are going to need and what, because he has international focus. And he's going to be presenting, and then we're going to have breakout groups after that to work on curriculum, and we're partnering with North Union, Big Walnut, and there's a few people coming from Buckeye Valley, as well as Mary School's teachers. So it'll start at, well, it's fine at 8 o'clock, and then we're going to run to like about 3 o'clock.
Again, all of these, I won't read through these, but these are the types of activities that we've started in the district that are planning. It is in progress for all of these areas. And I think one of the big things are the third from the bottom and the bottom is that whole idea of support structures for struggling students or just students in general who are even coming into the classroom who may be behind in a certain area or whatever. We are really, really, really struggling to get the intervention that we need for these children as class sizes increase, as our fiscal concerns, you know, continue to be what they are. And we have lost some of our intervention support. And this is something that we're trying really hard to problem solve with what we have in place. But we're seeing more and more struggling learners come to us, and we need to have interventions in place for them. Also, to be very skeptical of something that's an easy alignment or a quick fix. Do we want a Band-Aid approach, or do we want it to be systemic? We want it to be systemic, and that's going to take some time and effort to make that happen.
And even materials, I mean, right away, you know, it was like last year when the state board finally adopted those Common Core, you would have all this information, these textbooks, I mean, were aligned to the Common Core. Well, they couldn't, you know, be, they have to be very skeptical. Sometimes their alignment is just doing a dictionary search and they have the same term in there and they're saying they're aligned. So, I mean, you really have to be skeptical of those materials, you know, so they're really quality. And there's never anything that's a perfect piece because Ohio is not one of those statewide adoption states. So they go towards Texas and New York, you know, Illinois, those states with the state. Big state adoption.
This is the state guidelines to help districts as they move forward, but there are a lot of steps between all of those. This is an example of the transition plan that we are going to present to the principals and Larry, the administrators at Admin Council on Thursday for to finalize this plan. This is K-6. Yvonne has something similar for 7-12, and then Yvonne and I have worked to make sure that we have a seamless transition plan K-12. As you can see at each grade level, we have when the transition to the new standards will happen. And you'll also notice, too, in red, what is the assessment that students will be mandated to take? If you notice, they're still taking the current OAAs and OGTs up to 2014-15. So our teachers are like, it's like working on quicksand. We have the mandate to prepare our kids for current OAA and OGT testing, but we also have to be transitioning to the new standards to prepare them for new assessments. And more than the assessments in general, it's about what is good instruction for kids. So it's like we're serving two masters, and we don't know definites from the state yet. In terms of what consortia that we're going to go with for assessment, what are the formative assessments going to look like, but we're moving ahead as other districts. This is our transition plan. Once our administrators finalize this, hopefully on Thursday, then we'll roll it out to all the staff, and the work really begins full tilt. So that's K through 4 and 5, 6. I did want to show you that the group that's been working on this have been very diligent. If you notice, we started with first grade Common Core this year in math. We did a diagonal review of that to make sure that they were being transitioned into the new standards all the way through as they went from kindergarten all the way to sixth grade. And then we know that seventh grade has already started work on social studies. So we are doing the same thing with our, sixth grade group. We have a grade 3 through 5 science group that is meeting, that is looking at gaps between those grade levels, and we're very pleased with the work that has happened as a result of that. We're starting a 3 through 5 social studies group very soon, and we've also made application to be a part of the Ohio Performance Assessment Pilot Program. Mm-hmm. We hear back October 31st. They're only choosing 12 in the state, so we're keeping our fingers crossed because we'll get our eyes on what those online assessments are going to look like. So as you can see, our teachers are working really hard. All of our groups are working hard. Everyone's coming together to collaborate in team, and we're on the move. So that's where we are right now. But again, there's so much to this. It's just overwhelming. Yvonne and I come back, we try to put it into the plan that we have started. We roll it out to the groups that are liaisons between curriculum assessment and the buildings and vice versa, with the Race to the Top team and our administrators. So anytime you want more information or want to know where we're at. But November 28th is a big day for us. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. And again, if you wanted to look and see what the curriculum is on, how to participation on the academic content.
Great. You guys have any questions? Well, it certainly looks like a monumental task, no doubt about it. But you ladies certainly have a good plan in place, it looks like, and well on your way.
It's not just our plan,
it's the whole district.
It's teachers, administrators, parents, children, we're all in it together.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, next up, once Cindy gets done, is our finance committee, subcommittee. And a report on special education. I didn't have the 60-minute theme, you know, I would have played it for you.
Thanks.
Maybe Carla let you borrow her clicker that she bought in her little
case.
I offered the clicker thing.
Tonight I'm here to talk about special education report from the subcommittee on special education that comes out of the finance committee. Members of Jeff Rose, which is myself, Rich Baird, who's sitting over here in the middle row, Ken Cox, sitting on the front row, Kathy Alexander, Patty Luther, and Casey Sadler. Our support team was Monty Stats, and I must say, Cindy was a great help. So what is special education? Specially designed instruction at no cost to the parents to meet the unique needs of a child with a disability. Students are evaluated by a school psychologist and or a medical professional, and then an individualized education program, or IEP, or a 504 plan is developed to identify goals for each student. The IEP or 504 plan is agreed upon by the parents, teachers, counselors, and therapists. So, a little background on myself. I have a son that is a special needs kid, and we sit down every year, twice a year, and talk about his IEP. And nothing proceeds forward until that parent agrees to it, or their idea is brought forward also. Total ADM versus special education ADM. So basically, we've looked at the last six fiscal years of the district, and compared the total ADM to how many kids with special needs we actually have. So if you notice here, our ADM's gone up a little bit throughout the last 6 years, and our special ed ADM is kind of staying, you know, it's going up a little bit, but not at a large increase. I wasn't done with that one.
You need the click.
Go to previous.
Yeah.
The background.
Special education ADM averages about 14.67% of total ADM. So for the last 6 fiscal years, that's kind of where we've been at, about 15%. It is quite a large percentage for school districts here in the Central Ohio area. Now it's over. Special education is broken down into 6 different categories. Each category is a specific type of disability. So here are the 6 categories. Category number 1 is speech disabled. Okay, so basically a speech problem. Category 2, developmentally handicapped, learning disabled, or other minor health issues. Category 3 is severe behavioral handicap, hearing impaired, visually impaired. Category 4, orthopedically handicapped or other major health concern. Category 5 is multi-handicapped. And category 6 is deaf, blindness, autistic, traumatic brain injury. So we looked at, is there any type of state standard or anything that we need to go by for special education as far as a student-teacher ratio? So what we looked at was the 6 categories and what's the ratio for each one of those categories. Well, cognitive disabilities, specific learning disability, and prosperity. Categorical for high school is 24 students for every teacher that you have. And then elementary and middle school is actually 16-1. Emotional disturbances is 12-1, visual impaired, vision impaired, other health impairment, 10-1. Multi-disabilities is 8-1. Autism, deafblindness, and traumatic brain injury is 6-1. And then your occupational therapist, physical therapist, speech therapist is about 50-1.
And those ratios are all the same, K through 12,
yeah.
For the other one.
So what was Maryville's student ratio? Well, in 06, we were about 7.5-1. Fiscal year 11, we dropped clear down to about 5.5-1, 5.25-1. And we'll explain a little bit that as we go. So category number 1, where's Maryville at? Basically, we've gone up and down on category 1. Like I said, category 1 was speech disabled. Category 2 is one of the largest categories that we've got. And it's developmentally handicapped, learning disabled, other minor health. If you look at the trend line on there, it keeps going up. Okay? And this has always been the trend with this category. It's always been the largest category that we've got. Category 3, severe behavioral handicap, hearing impaired, visually impaired. This category looks like it's going down by the trend line, but what has actually happened, the state has actually taken this category and actually broken it out into some of the other categories. So over the course of the last few years, what may have been a category 3 years ago or 6 years ago is now maybe a category 1, 2, or 6. Could be just a different category, depending on what the illness actually is. Category 4, trend line is going up. Go ahead.
Question on the last slide. The trend line going down, did they start adjusting those categories back in 06? 7, 8, do you know when they started adjusting them?
I refer to one of my colleagues here.
I think it was probably 10.
It was 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's when we noticed the largest drop.
That was the largest drop.
But we were trending down in category 3, and then it
we were trending down before that.
Okay.
And
all right.
We're trending down more.
Okay. Thank you.
As we look at category 4, trending back up again. Orthopedically handicapped or other major health, this is usually more severe children. it's a very small percentage of the students that we actually have. If you look, there was only 8 of them. Category 5, large trend, that's your multi-handicap category. You'll see that we're trending quite a ways up in that category. Category 6 would be autistic children now. They've been able to actually diagnose more broader autistic, and Rich, you could help me out with that, but a broader.
Category 6 is where a lot of the kids from Category 3 have moved to because the autism diagnosis coming out of medical offices is more popular coming out of medical offices. May not have been recognized as autism before, and I'm not sure, I'm going to ask Ellen, but the autism diagnosis wasn't even a category until probably 2000. Probably 2000. So that's where, and if you note, Category 5 and Category 6 are the most staff intensive. Those kids require the most staff, and those are the two areas that are growing the most.
So what the committee wanted to do was review similar districts and compare special education costs and enrollment. And the districts selected were for analysis were similar in size by total ADM, percent of special education ADM, and also spending. What we looked at was Delaware City, Hannah Jefferson Local, Marion City, Reynoldsburg, Upper Arlington, and Whitehall City. So we looked at Category 1 for all of those districts, and as you looked across the board, in the later years, a lot of them are actually beginning to drop off in Category 1, where if you look at Marysville, we're kind of staying even in Category 1.
Now, if I go to Marion, and we send one of our Category 2 kids to Marion, are they going to be a Category 2 kid there, or could they possibly categorize them differently?
These categories are based on finances. Okay, Category is how the school's funded. So a Category 2 or a Category 1, the IEP travels with them, and they have a certain amount of time to review that IEP.
Right.
They may come with a different qualification, but it's most likely that they will remain the same. When the special education department meets, they don't talk about at the IEP meeting. They don't talk about Category 1 and Category 2. That's strictly a financial thing. So the things they talk about at the table might be autism, speech, language, learning disabled, cognitively delayed, emotional disturbance, those kinds of things.
So how do we fit them in the category then?
Well, the state actually puts those into the category in order to determine finances.
On everybody's IEP, they have a certain code, and
right.
Those codes go into their student records, and then the student records are then sent to the state, and they're told how much we are get for those types of students, and that's how they break it down.
Okay.
Through our EMIS
system.
Any other questions on that?
Yes, sir. For each category, you get, you know, let's say for a regular ed kid, you would get one. Just let's say a funding level of 1.
Right.
And then a Category 1 would be a funding level of 1 plus something.
Right.
You know, it continues to go up as you go up the categories, becomes more additional funding because of the severity of the
income. And we didn't look at that cost.
Right. Category. Right. Okay.
Next slide. Category 2. Category 2, you'll notice that Marysville, Delaware, and Upper Arlington pretty much stayed the same all the way across the board. Very little fluctuation in Category 2. Category 3. category three is the one that we said earlier where they started breaking up the autism more. So that's where all the categories actually start dropping down. It's kind of interesting that Marion, their category three has pretty much stayed the same. So I'm not sure how they're categorizing their differently. Maybe, I don't know. We didn't check into that. Category four, on those. Marion's category four has dropped way off.
Wow.
Where Marysville's pretty much stays level. So we're not really losing kids out of those categories. We're pretty much staying pretty much the same in all categories. Five is the same way. We're actually increasing in Marysville in category five and category six. This slide actually shows the difference between what the state required spending is for district and actually what the actual total expenditures are for district. So, for example, if you look at Marion, they're spending right at about $9 million, or have to spend about $9 million in special education, and are actually spending closer to $21 million in special education. Where Marysville, we're not quite half and half.
What makes up some of that blue?
Depends on how severe one of the students is. Busing, if we have to actually send them out of the district for class,
mm-hmm.
Enroll them in a different school somewhere because we just don't have the means to take care of them here.
Any of the expenditures that are done more than what the state gives us money for.
So we pay for all everything in blue?
Yes.
And the red would be all category driven.
Right.
And then they just have a set amount. If you have a category one kid, that's what they give you, and two and so on. And then the blue is your overage, what the local cost actually would be.
So we wanted to look at staff as far as what's total staff we got. Certified staff is basically your teachers, your classified is in your aides and your total. So basically, if you look at it, our staff is increasing. But with that staff increase, it also goes along with category five and six, where you need more staff for those students.
And going back, when I came to Marysville 40 years ago, there were two special ed teachers. Now you have a department of close to 140. Federal requirement has definitely made a difference. And the kids being in school now, and they weren't here.
I guess that's another question. That red, does that include federal requirements as well?
No.
So that's just state. So although we cover some of that blue, there may be federal requirements in there as well.
It's all federal requirement or state requirement. The red is the funding.
Okay. That's what I mean, though. But I mean.
There could
be
more federal money
received
for it, yeah.
Okay. Cost per student. Delaware City is actually spending about $9,800 a student. Marysville is spending about $9,600 a student. If you look at Marion, they're about 10,000 students, and Jonesburg is about $9,600. So when we look at spending per student, really not too far out of line with what everybody else is doing. Actually, we're pretty good. If I can, we'll just go right to the next slide because I'll kind of explain a little bit better. Green is the performance index. So remember, Delaware City was spending.
We did everything on 2010, fiscal year 10, because we don't have the state reports back from 2011 on special ed everything. So we have the 2007. So that's why that's showing the 99.8 when I think this year performance was over 100. So.
Yeah, it's 102 too.
Can we do what we have?
Yeah.
So our performance index in Marysville is a 99.8. If you look at Marion City, they're 82.2. Okay. If you look at the graduation rate percentage total, For Marysville, we're at 95.6%, and the graduation rate percentage for special education is 89.7% in Marysville. Now, remember, we looked at Marion, and Marion spends about $10,000 a student, and their graduation rate is a lot less than what ours is.
So this chart's really the bang for your buck chart.
Well, that one combined with your
cost per student
chart, yeah.
Now that
we're at the bottom of cost per student, but we're at the top, or third to the top, but right in line with Upper Arlington and Deanna Jefferson for achievement.
I think we've got a good program.
Yeah.
Things are going well. We're getting a lot of good money, or a lot of bang for our buck, you might say. We did look a little bit at gifted education. Gifted students are identified by screening in the spring of the second and the fifth grade year. Once those students are identified, the parents are notified of the gifted identification. But due to state funding and what we have found out, go to the next slide. Once gifted students are identified, they are not required by state to receive any additional education services from the district. The district is identifying the students, but at this time does not have any specific extra services for the students. We looked a lot at AP classes and thinking, okay, AP classes are for gifted students. Well, AP classes are actually open for any student today. So it's not really a gifted program. That's kind of it. Any questions?
Yeah, I guess my $10,000 question is, since you know, I know you guys have spent an inordinate amount of time on this. You know, if you've looked at it, it's, you know, you kind of dug through there and seen what we have spent. Is it the opinion of your group that you know, we're where we need to be? Are we not where we need to be? Is there things, you know what I'm saying? I mean, are we on the right? I don't make that sound like we're not on the right path, but you know,
financially, yes. I think we're doing very good for the money we spend per student. It shows in our graduation rate.
Sure.
Are there areas of improvement? Sure there is. Is that our job to look at that, or is that somebody else?
All right. Fair enough.
You saying that in a general way, that there's areas of improvement, or is there specific things?
What I'm saying is that there's, no matter what it is, there's always an area that,
yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Get closer.
Yeah. Okay.
If the board wants us to go look at things closer, we'd be more than happy to.
Personally, this pretty much shows that we've done a good job with it. And
absolutely.
I think that's the comment I was going to make is, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about, well, you know, we're a magnet, and so our rate, you know, we got people just flooding into here for special, you know, education type stuff. And you look at it, the ADM's pretty straight and flat. So I think having something, the time you spent wasn't wasted. I think it's just very valuable to see, you know, how we're doing.
I know it was actually pretty interesting to see how the categories moved around. You can really kind of understand, you know, the resource intensive kids, you know, that those trend lines are going up. So,
and that just shows for the future that we're going to be spending more money in special education, because I'm sure those students, as they get identified.
I think that's the other thing that was nice about this report is, I think when you guys first took this on, I heard a lot of people say, wow, it's such a complicated topic. It's just hard to get your head around it. And just in your presentation, I feel like I have a better understanding of our special education program. And, you know, it's very dumbed down for a board member.
I'm the dumb one of the group.
We had our gifted coordinators come in, and Ellen and our special ed coordinator, Ellen Trott, came in and spoke to us on before we even started looking at anything else. That was the first thing that we did, was we wanted to understand. And then we started looking at the financial reports.
Gotcha. All right.
I just think this is a great example of what we expect out of the committee.
Yeah, you guys did a great job, there's no doubt. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. No, thank you very much. All right. Next up is the High Point Report.
Not not much going on there. Well, I shouldn't say it that way. As far as the board goes, we had a FAFSA come in yesterday to, we're getting started with the superintendent evaluation system that we're wrapping up, and they're just now getting started.
Oh, so this is, your first year on it up there?
Yeah, well, we just had the introduction presentation as to how the process works. We already have the job description done, but we're at step one. And it was kind of neat to go back through that again, that because, you know, some of the things we learned the first time, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's... But yeah, so that's all. We spent most of the day doing that, and then we approved our 5-year forecast, which I've already reported on that. There was one notable thing that was worth pointing out. Tom Carrig is the instructor over the printing and graphics program. He just got recognized as getting a national award for having one of the top printing and graphics programs in the country.
Wow.
Pretty.
No kidding.
Yeah. Anybody has kids that want to get into printing and graphic?
It's a big plug, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Going up there. All right. Good enough. Thank you. The legislative report?
Well, interestingly enough, to go along with the subcommittee report, they recently were talking about two pieces of legislation regarding dyslexia. And one, House Bill... 143. That has gone to the health and aging. Not it. That's the head trauma one. yeah, it is 96. That has passed the House, gone through committee, passed the House, and is now in the Senate Education Committee. And that is for dyslexia, a learning disability screening and intervention services, because it's not something that is currently recognized. And so they had, I think it was like a 3-hour meeting. They were listening to testimony regarding that to see if they could get a pilot program going so that children can be screened. Because what they have found is, if they catch this prior to a child being 9 years old, there's a lot more they can do to help the child than if they recognize it later. So they've got the two pieces going.
They're just working on the funding part of that?
Well, that hasn't even been mentioned. There's no fiscal analysis yet. So yeah, that part hasn't. They haven't talked about that. So it's still in the education.
Okay, I'm sorry. Trying to be candid.
So, but that all was going on October 4th, and there was actually a lot of activity over at the State House about that. There has been another piece of education legislation introduced regarding sex education.
Really?
Yeah, they want to totally, they really totally revise what's in place, or that's what they're proposing. And that was introduced in the House on October 4th. And it's like a 13-page piece of legislation, but they've really, really marked it up a lot. It's pretty comprehensive. And then I understand that the House Bill 143, which is the Youth Sports Head Injury Concussion, that an amendment was made going into committee, but I have not been able to get a copy of the amendment. I've only been able to get a copy of it as submitted. So I'm not sure what their amendments were. But it's going to have different requirements for signing off on paperwork if a child, whether it's in a school sport or your soccer league in the community, if they have any sort of head trauma.
Really? So they're going to do baselines at the Y for?
There has to be, and then the coaches have to take a special training class to be able to recognize, not necessarily treat, but to know what to look for.
Big job for a volunteer coach.
I might not want to volunteer for your child's soccer. And this was something interesting I read, and I couldn't find any links to where they had. They had 140 schools have opted to take part in a pilot project for the teacher evaluation model. But I couldn't find anywhere where they actually had these listed out, other than Cincinnati, Columbus, Akron, and Toledo. But they also have 17 charter schools, 3 ESCs, 2 vocational schools, 9 exempted village, 40 city, 64 local schools who wanted to participate in that.
Got that list?
But
what did I have?
I don't know. There's a big article about it, but nowhere did they, say actually what school districts, wanted to be part of that. But it that came out of House Bill 153. That's about it.
All right. There it is. Thank you much. All right, next up is our public participation. Is there anybody here that wanted to address the board? It doesn't have a PowerPoint presentation. Yes, ma'am?
But I didn't have a form, so I didn't grab one before.
Well, we cannot let you leave unless you fill out that form. That's all right. You just want to introduce yourself and speak.
I'm Delilah Steinhardt. I think you guys have read my emails, and I just wanted to, I have a little, I'm nervous, so I had to write it down first.
That's
so
okay.
I wanted to have something to read to you guys. But I'm very, feel strongly about this issue, and think that there's something more that we can do. And my son has had issues with bullying recently, and he's had issues in bullying in elementary school, and he's had issues in the 2 years that he's been in intermediate school. Our current issue has been taken care of, and it was addressed, and it was addressed and handled appropriately. And I do commend the administrators at his school for taking charge in the matter and meeting with us and working with us and the boys and work out their differences and learn how to communicate in better ways. I thought that was awesome. They did awesome with my husband and I, and they're working with the boys to understand and learn how to communicate with each other, even though that they are and do have differences. So anyways, but this is one incident that was able to be resolved, and we have multiple incidences in our buildings and our school district that are documented incidences of bullying. The state of Ohio and its school districts define bullying as more than one incident. In my observation and my dealings with the bullying and its effects and the schools, the situation is becoming an epidemic, and we all need to address the issue head on. We need to admit that there is an issue in our schools and empower our teachers and our administrators to take the bull by the horns and work with all the kids and the parents of the incidences. And we should identify the bullying on the first incident and not wait for this to happen again. When you act on the first incident, it acknowledges that there is an issue between two kids, and before it escalates to something worse, try to resolve it or separate the kids. We have an opportunity here to be leaders and play an active role in the situation. What is being done now is not enough. We need to do more. Things aren't how they used to be when we were kids. Our environment has changed, and the kids are different, and we need to change with it. We can't afford to lose one of our kids. We can't wait another day without doing something now. All it costs is our time, and an honest effort to want to fix the epidemic. We can do this. We need to fix this now. And we can be role models for the rest of the nation. We can save our kids as a community, and this can this is a call to action. We as a community can do this, and we can't afford not to. I urge you to please act now. Our kids deserve it, and we need to address it.
Thank you. I don't know if you want to say anything about that, or
we brought in a national expert over the last month. We're working with our kids that have been in the classrooms. We're training. We have parent nights where parents can get trained.
Didn't I see that the what's that guy's name? John.
Jimbison.
Yeah, he's actually coming in and doing parent, student, and teacher training this month,
correct?
This month, October, or this month, November?
I'm sorry, this month, November.
Okay. He's been in once, several days, actually. And that is something we started addressing a year ago in order to get it's part of our plan.
Sure.
We don't tolerate it, and won't tolerate it. That's what I will tell you. But I will also tell you, it's hard to separate out when it starts, what it is, what it isn't, all those kinds of things. It's hard to separate the fat from the meat, so to speak. But if it's an issue, it's dealt with. And if we find that it's becoming an issue, it is. The definition that sometimes the parents have and sometimes the kids have, because bullying has been in the papers, it's been in national news, it's been everywhere. The definition of bullying is all over the place. We've discussed that before. It's we could line us all up in here, and there'd be some of us at different ends of the definition. So it isn't just one thing. It's not black and white. And that's it's different than a fight. Fight you can kind of sort out. Sometimes you got to sort out who threw the first one and all those kinds of things. But there's a lot of he said, they said, she said stuff going on in the background, some of which you can't see and some of which is difficult to have. But I will tell you, as a school district, we're committed to making it better. We also got to make the kids better. They've got to stop the name calling and those kinds of things. But in order to make the kids better, you got to make society better. Because society actually has the epidemic, not the kids. What the things that they see, the things that they see on TV, the things that they mirror. You go to any store here in town and just stand around and listen to how kids are pushed around and by their parents and things that are being said and those kinds of things. They just break your heart. So, as a commitment from the chair I sit in, we want to do the best we can for our kids. I've seen some severe bullying in this district, and I've seen some things that are defined as bullying by some folks that I can't get there yet. It is a lot of it's just the adolescence. A lot of it's just, if I go and push Cindy and I push her again next period, I'm not sure that's bullying yet. That could be, I like her or whatever. It could be a lot of different things going on. But that's the stuff that's hard to find out. Yep. Yeah, I don't like her. But she does sign the check, so yeah. But I don't know. I just rambled on, but that's okay. Our commitment. I can't disagree with you. The only part that I disagree with is how do you? It's not easy. And that's the tough part. It really is not easy to identify. Kids outnumber us. and they have a lot of access where they need to be taught to be civil to one another. Some of the things that kids say to one another are just incredibly inappropriate. But they see that constantly. That, you know, that's, I've said this to folks before, and the one thing that I've seen over my 40-year career, the big one of the biggest changes I've seen besides the makeup of the families is what I call verbal diarrhea. Whatever's on people's mind, but out it comes. That didn't used to be the case. Because you knew better. Because folks dealt with it differently back then. Yeah, exactly. But it's definitely what we deal with a lot. Some kids say some things at school that just that would not have been tolerated when I first started in this business. So society's changed a tad. So, but our commitment is to you and to your kids. Always, always will be. So
yeah. There was an interesting show on the other day, Dr. Phil. Of course, he makes more money than I do. He's on TV and all that. And pretty knowledgeable, but I think you hit it on target there. It really is, a lot of it is from what comes from the home. And the particular situations they were dealing with, they were getting help from the parent. In this case, you know, where the girl was a bully, and it was, a lot of it was just verbal stuff. It wasn't even, you know, some of it was physical, but it was just verbal.
Correct. And that's most that's what we deal with.
But the thing is, and I agree, you know, the kids, how does each one of them deal with it? You know, how do we know that one child's not going to go commit suicide and the next kid's going to just brush it off and deal with it?
Correct.
And how do we define what is or what isn't? You know, that's a tough call.
Yes.
But I think it is something that we have to address.
Agree.
Okay. Thank you again. Is there anybody?
I have a question.
Yes.
Hey, Larry, the guy that's coming in,
mm-hmm.
That's kind of the consultant,
Dr.
whatever.
Phil.
Not Dr. Phil, but the guy that you were talking to. Did he say anything about just kind of like, I'll call it posting a speed limit? That's what I would call it. In other words, we all know because there's a speed limit sign up here on 33 that we're not supposed to go over 65 miles an hour, okay? But if you don't put a sign up, then you have the excuse, I don't know. So did he mention anything about that?
Yeah, it's defining and really his approach is really making you kind of de-bullying,
mm-hmm.
basically. It just gives you skills to take the bully down without physically taking them down or acting like that bully. It's those skills. But identifying what is or what isn't,
right.
But giving you skills to kind of make the kind of the bully go away.
So
be ineffective. Because if you react to a bully, they've won.
Yes.
So it's not reacting to it.
It's taking their power away.
But did he mention anything about, in other words, I know you say it, and I've heard you say it time and time again, and I know that you not only say it, but you mean it and follow through, and that is, we will not tolerate it. And how do we tell everybody, every kid in the district, that we're not going to tolerate it?
Yeah,
it is not going to be tolerated.
Again, most kids get it.
I understand.
You know, you don't deal with most kids. You're dealing with same with adults.
Yeah.
Same with line 100 doctors up. You're going to deal with 4 or 5.
Yeah, but the way that
it's the same type of thing. So it's, you know, a lot of those kids, they've just been trained in that for so long that that's what they've become.
Yeah, it's trees, apples and trees. I know. I always use that.
Correct.
But
so
the message to them, though, that we will not tolerate it, is the same as that speed limit sign. You can go over the speed limit. And you get a couple of tickets, and you're going to say, I better slow down.
Mm-hmm.
So the not tolerating the bullying means we've got to take some action that tells these kids we mean business.
Well, I think you need to say it's like in your words. We will not tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's in the handbooks. We dealt with several situations this week,
and several, you know, just some of it starts with these things. You know,
oh, yeah.
Because it's constant. It's all night. You know, this the barrage
yeah.
of the electronic bullying, and that just then it's face to face, and then it's the electron. You know, it just
you can't get away from
you
it.
You can't. You can't. So, you know, it's something that we will continue to help make kids better at. But you also have to make your adults better at it. So you have to shut these things off occasionally, too, and have some limits on what you allow kids to say on those things.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments? Okay. Was there anybody else that would like to address the board at this time? All right. And we're going to move along. Next up is the minutes from the September 29th, the October 10th, and the October 17th meetings. Now, you've read all those minutes.
Uh-huh.
Some are long, some are short. There's no comments, changes, whatnot. I need a motion to accept those then, please. Second. Moved and second. Roll call.
Mr. Brewer. Yes. Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Breaker.
Yes.
Mr. Roenberg.
Yes.
Last
yeah.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, it's the treasurer's report.
I will try to be brief.
Well, thank you.
I will. Everybody's had the 5-year forecast now for a couple weeks.
Couple months.
I'm just going to do some highlights on this year's 5-year forecast. Valuations, no change from last spring, since we won't have any valuations till. Soon, hopefully. It'll probably be about the same thing. Our millages for our revenues are the same right now until we get those new evaluations. The one thing on our millages that we've got to remember is our valuations are going down. We've got 4.7 mils in inside millage, and that used to grow as our millage went up. That would have that growth with it. We no longer have that 4.7 mil, any of that growth any longer. So as our values go down, so does that one area of growth. And the reason I say one area of growth is that when you pass a levy, you can only bring in that amount of money for that levy. So at that point, or the millage, if our values go down enough that it brings it back up to 5 mil, we aren't going to collect any more than 5 mil. So it may be less than what we voted for that levy, but it's at that millage. As far as the state funding this year, we are receiving more on our state aid for this year. We also, because we are excellent with Distinction District, received $17 per student, which is another $91,681.
Fantastic.
Isn't that great? However, it's only based on 5,393 students, and I believe our count was over 5,400. So they're using fiscal year 10 numbers to give us our money for it instead of last year's figures. Those that, yes, they are.
Yeah, we'll get next year.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get this last year's kids next year, whatever. But that's
hopefully
the way
go
they
down
can.
Next year, and we'll collect off of this year.
Yeah, that could be. You never know. But that was strange when I looked at it. I'm like, okay, it's based off fiscal year 10 numbers. Okay. Tangible property tax. The other thing about this fiscal year, we were expecting it not to change. We were going to keep getting the same amount as we had the last 2 years, but with the change in House Bill 153 or whatever the budget bill buzzes,
mm-hmm.
153, it is now being decreased by 2% each year for this year. Next year, they do have a stop on it, and in the tax department, they're showing that stop it. We won't receive any, or we won't have the 2% until it's gone, but it's still in the budget bill. So anytime a budget bill comes out, we are still going to have to fight to either keep that or have them do something different with that, because that money was the district's taxpayers' money as our TPP tax, and it's now gone. The TPP collection is gone. But the replacement of that money, the local money, is not there. So it's either up to the local jurisdictions or it's up to the state to give us some change in that. we're going to have to see that. Our all-day, everyday kindergarten tuition is down a little bit. We went from 5 classes last year. We only have 3, I believe, this year. So that tuition is down a little bit, so our other revenue is down a little. And we are assessing our cafeteria fund, $50,000 this year for the utility usage. Now that they're in the red, or in the black, no longer in the red, they're able to help pay for some of their utilities. Our financing other sources is the old House Bill 264 project that was done back in 2005. We're paying $50,000 a year in premium on that. We're down to almost $500,000 now that we still owe, and once that's done, it'll be paid out of there. Our local taxes, our local funding is 47% of our total revenue. State's 52%, and that includes our property tax allocations and the TPP reimbursement. And then we have other for 1%, which is the funding on that. As for our expenditures, the funding personnel that we do have in there, the actuals as of September, and if teachers take any classes and move over on the salary schedule during the year, they'll be able to do that. We've had some people leave, so those will be changes within there. So I haven't looked at those changes yet to finish out the end of the year, but I'll keep looking at that every time. Probably in January, update it again as far as this year's personnel. Next year, I did, just because we aren't sure what changes are going to happen for the staff for next year, I've zeroed out the replacements of the staff for that use the buyout. So that way that we've got an area that we can look at. And we've talked about that a little bit. We'll just have to keep looking at that. Our insurance benefits, we've got an 8% increase in that. I don't believe that it's going to be 8%. It may be less. It looks like it's going to be less than that, but we won't know until probably the end of next month to see for sure. Our workers' comp rate is less, so I was able to deduct some of that calculation. And the drop was almost a full percent from last year, and that was before any of our discounts. So we'll know more in January this year, so that could be even less. And since that's based off of our salaries in calendar year 11, and we've got less in salaries this year than what we did last year, that could be a pretty good decrease that we'll need to all look at here again once we get the rate from the workers' comp in January. As I say, a forecast, it changes every day, no matter what we do. When you think you've got everything in here, something else is going to happen. Something might. We might have to have something changed out, like a boiler or something. Luckily, we've got our PI, but if we didn't, we'd have to use that.
Well, you're not dealing with actual numbers of kids yet, either.
No, we are not.
We just had the October count.
Exactly. So. We do not have the actual number of students, and I'm not so sure.
Or the special ed categories.
Exactly. We're looking at in the special ed categories as far as tuition to other districts. We've got a couple other students that we have now that we've had, instead of housing them here, they're going to an autistic school, so that we didn't expect at the beginning of the year. So, and then some have come back in. So there's those type of things are changing constantly, and we're keeping track of that. As far as the purchase services, we've got a 4% in there for increase in our inflation. Our materials, our 3% increase in classroom materials. The other big item in that material is our supply and workbook. We've moved that from the 009 fund into general fund because we have to do the free books for anybody that's on free lunches, free supplies, free workbooks. So our auditor said it'd be better if we move that, and that's what we did last year. So we had a little estimate in there last year. I've gotten some better numbers from the staff this year, so that made a difference.
Is that why that number jumped up like that?
Yes, it is. That's why that jumped up like that. Our other objects are the main ones in there are auditor and treasurer's fees, bank fees, liability insurance, those type of things, and our annual audit. So that's an increase. And as they collect more or less, that's totally based on that, our auditor and treasurer's fees there. And then in our salary and benefits are 86% of our total expenditures. We have two levies that will be coming up that we can start looking at. November in 2012 would be the earliest that we could put the replacement or renewals back on. We've got to look at whether or not you replace it like you did the 5 mil back in 2005 or 2008. 2008, we did the replacement.
Now, if we replace it, do we lose the TPP money that's attached to it?
No, because it was passed before TPP was on
there. Yes, even though it's replaced, you're still replacing the same levy at that millage. And so that's the same at 2008 and when it was replaced.
It dropped off.
Was that 9? Because eight was the new levy, 9 was the replacement, right?
I think they were both at the same time. I don't know.
Because I think 9 was on when I, at the same time, our we elected the board, I think they had a levy on the ballot, I think, right?
In November. Yeah, that November election.
That was 9. That was 9.
They all kind of flowed together.
Yeah. So, right, yeah. But those were after that because that had to have been done in 2006, so, yeah. So the replacement, you would not lose your TCP replacement.
Okay.
But if we do not pass these levies and we lose the levies, then you lose.
And then you have to put a new one on,
and
you'll lose
you
all that.
You lose all of the TPP replacement.
Would be, effective, what's the difference in effective millage and how much would that bump up? Today's number.
I think I might have it here. I'm not sure.
Those other two are both 2009.
Yeah, they were both 2008. One is like maybe, I just looked at that this afternoon. One is 5 and one's at 4.7. They're not very much difference. It's not a very much difference.
So the effective hasn't really
went down now because our values have been going down.
Right.
Yeah. So, I just looked at those numbers this afternoon. I can't remember.
And that's for both Class 1 and Class 2?
Class 1 and Class 2.
Well, class
2 is actually, Class 2 is running higher, and I think Class 2 is still right at 5 on one of them.
Yeah.
It's right at 5. That rate's right at 5, so yeah.
Okay.
So that's my report for the night.
Okay. That's the, I lost my agenda here.
I did want to talk about the staff on the.
Sure.
So, just like I want to understand. So, the forecast has us reducing staff by 13, but it's not realistic that we're going to do that. It's kind of the impression I got from the notes is that we're not putting them in the forecast, adding those 13 staff back, but we don't think that they can be absorbed without cutting some sort of programs or something, right? Am I interpreting that wrong?
What I said was of the people who are retiring, that we already know that they're retiring.
Right.
I know that those folks, most of those folks, will need to be replaced, or at least their teaching spot.
Right.
What I don't know, and it's far too early to tell, is what other retirements you're going to get and what other certifications you can kind of weave through there, where you could absorb a position or not. I know by looking at those folks that are retiring that you can't absorb the positions that they're teaching. I mean, for instance, you have a high school science position that's retiring. You can't. You have far too many requests for that course. That course has to be replaced with a teacher. So, but whereas last year we were able to absorb, move people around into positions, but you just can't do that all the time. You're going to be able to do it some within this group, but not totally. One of the retirements is an administrator, a principal. That principal's going to have to be replaced because the building is
Out in the sticks.
You have too many teachers. You have too many teachers. By law, you have to have a principal in that building. So you can't absorb and combine them.
Right, but I mean, that would be hard to have that building shared with anyone, even if you didn't have that many teachers. It's way out there.
And I think that's what's my only concern is that there's really no picture here of the reality. This is really a picture of, and I know forecasts aren't generally pictures of reality,
In a forecast, you look at areas where it makes some sense to kind of, that's the number you need, that makes some sense to do, let's have at it. Now, the work becomes to try to keep that from happening. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we have to do. You know, if that's X number, you know, instead of taking that out of multiple accounts, mm-hmm. take it out of your personnel account. Because if you're going to have an impact, you have to have personnel. It's going to have to come out of personnel. But do we really want to do that? That's going to be the challenge. And then can you find these dollars to keep replacing those positions and go at it? I mean, we're going to know more. We'll know more in January. In February is the high school kids' schedule. You're gonna know more about your population at that point. How many? Are we staying static? Are we getting new kids? What's our population in special ed? How's that gonna move as those kids transition into the new grade or new buildings? Because as they move, as they transfer into the larger buildings out of the smaller buildings, sometimes you can do some absorbing there of kids and cross-categorical in special ed, you can do some of those kinds of things. So what Cindy did in there from a staffing standpoint was the right thing to do from a forecast standpoint. But the challenge is for you as a board and administratively in the community, there are some tough questions that have to be asked because some of those positions have to be filled. This will have to be. You have a high school math.
There's five high school teachers.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those are the kinds of questions that you just every month kind of see where you are. And know that the challenge is you don't eliminate the program. Right? You don't want to do that.
And that's really where I'm driving at is I don't want approving this to say that we're eliminating
the program. No. That's not what it says. All that five-year... that forecast says is that we balanced.
Right.
We're in the black. So to remain in the black, here are so many positions that we eliminated, but it was one way of grabbing dollars.
And I'm not going to argue with the determination to stay in the black for 13. So as time goes on and we realize that we have to hire some of those back, the same determination is to find other places to make up those dollars.
You'll have to do that. Okay. That's a discussion that we have constantly. That's a discussion that will have to be ongoing. Okay. That's not, you know, I don't know what we ever did with these forecasts, to be very honest. I mean, D was 10 years ago, mm-hmm. I think. My first 5-6 years, we didn't have this.
You did it on paper, right?
You just did it on paper, and you kind of did your own. This forecast is amazing. I mean, you start plugging things in and do some what ifs and those kinds of, and it just shows different ways, and then you can yank some dollars out of here and see what it does overall. And we budgeted for 8% and 8% increase in insurances. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be under that.
Okay.
So to freeze up some dollars that'll happen between now and January. We'll know. We already have the quotes back in. We're just messing now with messing. It's a good technical word, I guess, but. That's what we're doing right now is looking at those and what those costs are going to be, and is there a different way to tweak the plans and so on, and what if we do this and those kinds of things. As a matter of fact, we spent a lot of time this afternoon doing that and kind of finalizing that. And but I hope we're under, and I hope we're under, you know, a significant amount that just kind of all of a sudden helps you buy some stuff back. And then you hope there's some other things, and you know, you go along. But again, you're going to have to watch it on a monthly basis and get an update. And some of this you won't know until spring.
Sure. You know. Let me ask one more question. So even if we are able to stay in the black in F-13, which, I mean, we're in the black by like 300,000, I mean, when does that run up? Like 3 days after we go into...
Yeah, that the $300,000 is not even 2 days of true cash.
Right. So, I mean, our realistic picture for next year is what? I mean, are we looking...
We need to really sit down and start thinking about what we need to do as far as 2014.
Yeah, that's your critical year.
Yeah.
Now, will the timing of contract negotiations, does that all fit, or is that off the table for us trying to solve
this? No, that's all part of it. I mean, you're going to have to do some what ifing about that.
2013.
You can do some best guessing.
The end of 2013 is when that contract's up.
Contract's up.
So it's June.
That's what I was saying, though, is if that's up then, I just wasn't sure about the timing of how all that stuff.
Well, it's going to be in the middle of a fiscal year.
It's the middle of a fiscal year, but it's done in December 31st.
Because we did it through June 13th.
Yeah.
We changed
at
that.
End of June.
That's right.
Started
so to June 30th.
You're right.
June 30th and 13th, we moved it. So
with $300,000,
it's not much money, no. And more than likely with this, going to the state, they will probably give us a letter, send Larry and myself a letter from the state saying that you don't have enough, you've got a low balance in cash for next fiscal year.
Yeah, it's something we don't know already, but we get that.
We get this letter saying we need to, the area coordinators will come in, talk to us, and...
Well, that lets you know that they know.
Yeah,
that's
they're
right.
Great, they're a great deal of help. They, you have to hope, you know, this is with the tangible still in there.
Yeah.
If that becomes a political toy again, you know, and that goes away, that forecast
just went away too.
Just goes away $1 million a year. Boom. I mean,
and even then you won't know until
fiscal year 13.
That's right. When everything else kind of
that's correct. Mm-hmm. June the 13th is when the new state budget's due again. That's correct. 2 year budget.
And I think it's probably the types of serious conversations we probably gonna have next year is kind of looking at those.
You also have
no question.
You're supposed to have a new formula. It was supposed to be announced
this month.
This in November.
Yeah.
They've postponed it now to January. And we're hearing in February that you know you're going to get a new state formula.
Was that the bridge?
We're in bridge right now.
Yeah, we're already in bridge.
We're just using the old foundation formula.
I'm not sure what they're using.
They're
using,
a
guarantee.
It's a bridge to nowhere.
I think the piers are
cracking. You know, nobody knows what the new foundation is going to be. No one. That is a best guess. And state foundation basically shows you how much money you get per kid and how they get paid and those kinds of things and what your community value is compared to that foundation. It's pretty complex. Right now you're supposed to be getting $5,700 a kid and we get what, 26?
Like
we get $2,600 out of that $5,700. That's what you get. So if it's adjusted downward, then we're in more shape than what you are right now. So you have to watch that pretty closely also.
Mm-hmm. So I'd be curious, how often do you, I mean, maybe better, since we only really see or improve our forecast twice a year, I mean, maybe it's more appropriate to have that forecast on our agenda maybe a couple more times. But not to improve it, just to look at it and you know, just to see.
We look at it.
I look at it about.
Well, I know you look at it, but a lot of times when I say, "Hey, what's the forecast look like?" You're like, "Well, I've got this laying out over here."
Here's what I think makes more sense, Jeff. I think as dollars become available, let's say they're significant, then say these are now available and we're going to put them here, and then start adding them up on a, on another column.
Okay.
For instance, insurances, yeah. or even workers' comp. The workers' comp could be a significant number for us. Because, our workers' comp plan is working, and right now, you know, to have it deducted and then to have that times, you know, your 2011 salaries, and salaries are down, that could potentially be a couple $100,000. May
sure.
not be that high, but could be. And that's a big deal. It won't be that high, but it could still be a staff member or two staff members. So, you know, those are the kinds of things I think as dollars become available, I think
sure.
we start needing to make a list.
Well,
and see how you can start
what
making
it. What we can do
is
work on it from within the forecast,
yeah.
or just adding them back into the forecast as we get.
I just that's something I'd like to
yeah.
see more than twice a year.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
it's appropriate. So.
I do like the idea of keeping it separate, just so you have the visibility.
I think you
can
put it under other or something. Like
yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Just keep just add a new page.
Yeah.
Call Ernie, he'll add a new page.
No, it'll mess the formula up.
That Ernie.
Actually, it'll be in the notes.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, was there any other questions then on A or B? If not, then I move we accept the items submitted by the treasurer collectively, both A and B.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Ms. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up is the resolution accepting amounts and rates.
We've talked a lot about this. You've asked me for options. I've given you options on the debt. I've given you thoughts, what my thoughts were on the debt. Larry and I've talked about what it needs to be. We both feel that it should be at the full 3.43. So that rates would bring those bond rates back up to where they would be collecting more, and so that we won't have to take it out of the PI as much. The options that I've given you show each option possibility anywhere from the 3.43 to 1 this next year. Do a 1, 2, 3. A 2, and then a 3-4, or just 2s, and that's up to you how you want to do that.
When we were at the retreat, I mean the PI forecast that we had before we added in this list of other things that
mm-hmm.
we wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
That had us kind of in the black all the way through 15 without, well, I guess I just wanted to know what that had us doing, because it looked like we still paid.
We only did 2 years of payment, if I remember right.
Yeah, so in other words, we didn't do anything this year or next year. Or no, this year, yeah, this year or next year in terms of the bond rate.
This one
we only had money coming out for this next year,
but
in fiscal year 13 for the
12 and 13, right? The money came out,
yeah. Mm-hmm. 12 and 13.
I guess my thinking on it, I just
and it would be negative by the end of fiscal year 16.
I mean, I recognize that there's things that we probably need to do in PI that we haven't done. And I just, the list that was put out, there were notes in it saying that, these are preliminary projects. And I know there hasn't been a whole lot of, I know there's probably been work on your guys' end to say these are things we should be doing. It's just, I struggle with it because it kind of doubles our budget and our expenses over the next year in PI. And I think that's... And then at the same time, we're trying to raise. This would be raising taxes, really, without having a real conversation. Or I think we should be asking the community to for input on it. I understand they don't have to vote on it because they've already voted on it, but I just have a hard time raising taxes by 3.4 mils or whatever it is.
You know what? It's something that we've never wanted to do.
I understand that. I'm just saying that this is my position on that, and I don't, you know, looking at this, it's not a drastic situation where we have to do it this year.
Well, in my opinion, I think you're at a crossroads. I really do. You know, I think you've got to address the debt in a significant amount because you're going to get further behind the eight ball.
And I certainly appreciate that. I guess my concern is, you know, we've kind of known about this for a while now. I think 4.5 mils was thrown out in the spring at some point. I don't know where, but
yeah, I went back and looked. Back when we did our presentation, and then we did another presentation to the governor's office. Ours was a little over 4 mils.
Yeah, every
possible. The thing we did for Barb Chainer.
Mm-hmm.
It moved a little bit down just because of some of the dollars that became available, and again, you know a little bit more at this point. But I think you're if you don't grab a hold of it, I think you're messing with your bond rating. I think you're at risk. And again, I say that only because of the number of bond rating meetings I've been through over my career. I don't want this district to do that because you're going to have some bonds come due and you're going to run and refinance them. I think you've got to take an aggressive look at what you want to do. And understand, the very last thing I want to do to this community, it's been the thing that we've preached all along. We want to keep the rates as low as possible and the millage rates there, low. There's nothing that we wanted to do to see, and we jumped up and down and screamed and hollered for multiple years about the amount of value that's being taken out of this community for other purposes. But I think you have to address it. You have to do something. You know, to do nothing, I think, would just be the wrong move. And Andrea needs to know in order to get the rates set.
And the rates that she sent us was 1 mil more. And so she would definitely increase it probably by 1 mil just herself because she has to do that.
Increase it? You mean increase from where we are today?
Yes, so by at least 1 mil. Which
so she's automatically going to raise it by one?
If that's what she gave us to approve, yes. That's what she's giving us to approve, at least by 1 mil.
So as I'm looking at your PI levy, obviously the one that we got at our retreat, but either one of them will work. If we continue to pay to do a full reimbursement out of our PI levy, when would we actually run out of money?
I believe probably about, well, if it's, yeah.
I mean, if we're doing what we do today.
Year. Yeah, about fiscal year 15 is what we looked at.
We'll be out of money.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we'll be in the red.
In the red, and that means that we'd have to pay our debt before and made sure that the debt was paid prior to anything else being done within the district.
So by doing that, how much money do we have each year to actually spend on PI items?
We receive 2.9, and we'll be paying at least right around 1 million or more. So I would say anywhere, it just depends on the year for that, because everything I've got has got the accumulation in it, and that's why I can't give you an exact number, but it would be close to 1 million to 2 million each year, depending on the accumulation going forward.
My biggest concern is similar to Doug's in that the community isn't aware of what's going on. Because when we had our presentation with the brunt of this information, you know, it wasn't here at the board office. And then the last meeting when we had the presentation, the recording wasn't working, and I don't think it was well known. And for the community to find out about it by getting a tax statement, you know, with taxes due, and wondering, you know, where this increase came from. And
no opportunity to come speak to the board.
And you know, and having no idea, and the people, you know, the senior citizens, the people on fixed incomes, without getting out into the community and going to the people, you know, wherever they are, the, you know, community centers or to talk about it and let them be aware of what's going on and what we're facing. I mean, these rates haven't been looked at. When I went back through minutes last night, I was trying to go back to see when this last happened. It wasn't since 2008. That was the first minutes I could find where the board actually, you know, reviewed the rates and approved them.
We approved them last year.
But where it was all laid out, you know, and I had seen where they had done that with what the millage was 2008.
So what's your suggestion?
Yeah, I mean, how many, we've had, I mean, look how many people that we had at our superintendent search committees where we invited 4,000 people.
Okay, what I said was go to the people, not invite them in. How many senior citizens do you know who like to go out after dark? I don't know any.
I don't know any either, but again, you're their elected representative. You're their representation, okay? You can't, you know, if you're asking them to come in, it's been in, I understood, it's been in the paper, it was probably something else we may have been able to do, I guess. I mean, if you're counting on everybody to listen to our minutes and
no,
get
no.
that, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's our responsibility to make sure that our operation runs correctly. I don't want to raise anybody's taxes. I sure as hell don't want to pay any more taxes. But it's my responsibility as a board member to make sure this operation can still continue to operate, and we take care of our buildings, and we have our curriculum is changing. God knows we're going to spend a ton of money on resources for that. Moving on.
I understand that, but we're not in a situation where we're out of money and absolutely have to have it right at this minute. And, you know, our vision is talking about a partnership with the community. And,
right.
And so I think the thoughtful thing to do would be to go out into the community and discuss this and
well,
let people know what's going on.
We want to be, I mean, if there's a chance that we're going to be on the ballot in the next year or two, for us to raise taxes by 3.42 mils or whatever, keep getting the number messed up, but it's like $600 a year on a $150,000 home. I mean,
I don't think it's quite
no,
that much.
That's not right.
On $150,000?
No, it's $120 per $100,000. And even
for
still,
three, that's one
for $100,000
home.
$100,000. That was a 3.4. Okay.
It's $120.
Right, that's right.
It's about $35 for every.
And even still, it doesn't have to be 3.43.
Right.
I mean, it can be. You know, I respect your. You know, what your opinion is. I don't personally don't think 3.43 is.
But as the values come down, right? Will they actually see?
I don't know.
Well, they actually see a dollar change.
At one mil, they may not.
That becomes a question.
At three mils, they may.
Right.
Some.
But my point is, for us to increase it by 3.43, that was my point. If
right.
We're talking about that, it's just, I have a hard time understanding the justification for that. By looking at this and trying to reconcile it with the PI forecast. We committed to putting PI dollars towards paying one of those
sure.
those things down. So I have.
But you understand that commitment was made at a time when growth was going on, when values were going up, and whatever, you know, the forecast that John Adams put together for the folks at that time was based on that.
I understand, but I'm just saying that it's tough enough for as much as we've looked at this for me to get my head wrapped around it and even sort out what the right millage should be, and for us to just do it, it's not going to bode well at all within the community, and we don't even know what the impact on people are with that. We haven't talked to them about it, you know, and typically when you raise taxes, people vote on it. So I understand in this situation, you want to say they voted on it already because, well,
They did vote on it.
Okay, so let's go back to the 05 levy. Sure. When they voted on it, they were told 1.5 mils. Nobody knew that how we were able to pull that off. Nobody knew that, hey, you know, this is betting on some growth, because if the growth doesn't happen, we're going to end up having to come back to you. That wasn't part of that discussion. So, you know, I'm just saying that the courtesy thing to do would be to get out to the community talking. If we have the dollars to do that, and we, meaning that we don't have to do anything this year, which we don't, then let's go out and like Tracy suggested, let's get out to the community and talk to them about it.
Okay, how do you plan on doing that?
Find out when their meetings are. Go to their meetings.
Okay. I mean, if you put it this way, I bet you got a heck of a lot more people showing up to a meeting if you say, hey, we're going to raise your taxes. Now is the time to speak up.
But I think it would, for a lot of the sectors, you know, senior citizens and different areas, it would be better to find, you know, go to their meetings as opposed to inviting them to one of ours. You know, whenever they might have their meetings, wherever they are, at their community centers or their churches, or and just attend them and talk to them.
What do you think?
If you meet with them, it's just to communicate, right? I mean, it's not to say, what should we do or what do you want us to do, because they're going to say, oh, don't raise my taxes.
It's going to be say, how will it affect you? Can you still buy your medication? Can you buy food?
Yeah, I know. I'm saying, though,
that's the
meetings
point
are going
of it,
to be
to know how it's going to affect them.
And help them understand why that we're in this situation is a big part of it as well.
Because if we have 2 renewals up next year,
mm-hmm.
next year, you can certainly talk about that in addition to
right.
What else coming up.
So you're going to, next year when our renewals are up and we decide we want to raise our taxes, is that the best time to do that? There's no good time to do it. I just want to make sure that's very clear. I mean, but I'm saying you're having that conversation then. Now we want to talk about a renewal, and
no,
we're just going to raise your taxes on top of it.
It would be good community relations to get out and talk to people to see, you know, how it will affect them. I mean,
it's going to affect them adversely. I can tell you that it's going to affect me adversely. It's going to affect you adversely. That's.
Are you still going to be able to eat?
I don't know. I mean, I assume so. If I took a picture today, yeah, I would be able to eat. Do I know what's going to happen next year? No, I do not.
Well, I think, you know, there's a sector of our community who it will affect more than others, and I think that we owe them, you know, to go out and talk with them and find out how it, because we're, you know, in a partnership with our community.
I get that.
And the last survey that was taken, I kind of was looking over that this afternoon. Almost every answer that was on there had to do with communication. People wanted to be communicated.
No question.
And they didn't feel as if they were.
I don't disagree with that either.
So. And I feel like this process has not been communicated out to the community at all.
So the auditor wants 1 mil regardless, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, in effect, will cover the loss in TPP, if I'm not mistaken. The 250 loss in TPP, that 1 mil will cover that plus about $100,000 more.
I mean, would this have come out into light sooner had we gone through the normal process that's set out in the Ohio Revised Code, which most counties go through, where the school board approves the tax budget and submits it to
no.
the county in January, and then you go through the process in March and in June? And
no.
Why not?
Why not? Because we give them all the same information now. We've given them the same information. We still provide them what our debt schedule is every year.
But we also tell them that we're going to supplement it with our PI dollars and our TIP dollars, right? That's why our rates are where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
they're not where they're at because of a mistake. They're where they're at because
property values dropped.
Well, no, I'm saying
we weren't going to supplement those forever.
No.
That wasn't the goal.
No, but what I'm saying is that's there was if we've just been there's a planning that goes into that. That's what we're talking about here, right? Is you know we're supplementing with PI. Here's the impact it has on PI. Here's the things we need to do with PI. You know, I mean, I think there's an exercise there of going through that and saying, you know, when times are good, you go through and do what you just did. These are the things we'd like to do, and this is what it's going to cost. Let's do it. But when times are tight and tough, like they are now, you need to go through it. I think it several times with a little more scrutiny and a little more evidence and really challenge some of those items. I mean, Jeff, you and I talked on the phone, and there was items on here we already
absolutely
did. Yeah. So
there's
I mean,
no question.
I just think that since the PI forecast with those dollars in it is part of justification, I'm still looking at the big number, the 3 mil one. Since it's part of that justification,
the auditor sees that we have lost value, that we are not going to have as much as what we were going to have, and she feels that the 1 mil is.
The 1 mil, is that what we're talking about now? Is this the 1 mil?
Well, if we just go to that, it's not going to keep us going, but it'll supplement help with what we've received, what we lost this year.
That 1 mil would technically keep you treading where you are now, right?
Yeah, that would. What we saw, why this was brought out was we saw that it was costing us more in making payments because of different items. A, the valuations going down, the TIF not coming in at the rate that we thought it was. All those items hit when we started looking at it last summer to see what type of projects that we could do. And do we have enough money to do the projects that we need to do? We did not do any of our asphalting this year because we had to make that payment for the bond. So we couldn't do any of them this year. Now, do we have to do that every year? We're going to have to if we don't have any more, if we keep taking money out of the PI and making the payment to the bond.
So the textbooks that were within there, is that what, you know, the current expectations are for the curriculum changes? Or is that
some
just
of
kind of maintaining?
Some of those,
you know,
are extra that we really didn't have a good chance to.
Well, that number though that's in there is a pretty solid number actually.
Like for trying to keep up with the textbooks we're currently, or is that trying to buy the new stuff for the new curriculum?
No, that's estimating about what it would cost if you went into replacing what you have now. That's not looking outward very, very far and looking at the cost of this new curriculum, because that's a best guess at this point. Even we have no idea how much, you know, some of that's going to cost, because it hasn't been identified even what it is.
Whether it's actual textbook or
Whatever.
Electronics
or stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff that's going to be necessary. That's a whole, you know, you're not going to know that for
And if it's stuff, then it doesn't come out of PI, it's going to come out of general fund.
Well, that depends on what that stuff is.
If it doesn't last for 5 years.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, people, what are we doing?
Well, I understand that we are in a position that we can do that because the people voted on it back when times were better. And I, what Tracy is saying, I agree that times are not good for a lot of people. And for us to utilize our power to do this doesn't seem to be fair. Even though we have the power to do that, I'm just kind of concerned that we are taking advantage of the situation that we need to take advantage of, but... We're taking advantage of it where they don't have an opportunity to.
Yeah, another way to look at that, though, really is, and again, we discussed this last time, a traditional bond levy, a bond issue. You know, you pass 5 mils and it's collected at 9 traditionally. It's just, or whatever. It's those first several years, it's whatever is on the ballot, it's above it, because you have to earn, you have to pay it down, because you're going to lose value over time of that whatever you just passed. But you have to collect it ahead, because you want dollars in there in case you have a bump along the road, so that your bond retirement fund has some cash in it. Our bond retirement fund has nothing in it right now.
Well, on one particular one, we're collecting more than, was it almost
on
half a mil?
Yeah, but one issue.
I understand that.
Out of the several. So, you know, what my point is, what we tried to do for this community, really, we saved them a lot of money over time, saving a lot of millage over time. And right now, at no fault of ours, no fault of this community's anyway.
Let's assume that they would pass that levy in 05 knowing that. I mean, that levy was passed because we told them 1.5 mils.
Even if you needed 1.5 mils in a traditional bond issue, you would have collected maybe 3 or 4. That's how it's done.
But at the same rate, this is what they have been paying, and then to suddenly increase it by this much.
I get it. I understand that. I think you're messing with fire. I just
now there is an element of this that, so let's forget the 05 levy, but regular levies, the bond levies, as valuations change and it's not bringing in as much, you do have to adjust the millage up to service your debt. If we were never ever supplementing this, that would just be an automatic thing you'd have to do, right?
And
if you pull those out, basically that's you would have to up it.
Yeah, so I mean, if we wouldn't, because right now the waters are somewhat muddy because we supplement it with other dollars, but if we didn't do that, it would just be a math exercise.
That's
right?
Correct.
That's right.
And by 3.4 mils.
Well, that's where.
But I mean we're supplementing. Basically, we've pulled the PI out of there. Whether the PI gets, or some of them, most of it, whether it gets spent on those projects or not, that remains to be seen. The thing you're doing, though, is maintaining the integrity of that PI fund for infrastructure purchases. What you spend out of there could come off that list, could be identified.
Sure.
I mean, those asphalt projects could come in a heck of a lot higher.
Well,
you could lose a server tomorrow or a boiler tomorrow that you don't know, you know, and you,
they don't have,
you
money
have
to
maintain
it.
Your facilities. And that's the concern about where we are right now. As I said, you're at a crossroads because you're running out of debt payment money, and you're also running out of PI money in order to maintain your facility. So it's those two things. You have a blip in the map, and you're in trouble backwards, and it's hard to recover backwards. And that's kind of where we are right now. But it's hard to recover. You know, again, I hate it. I absolutely hate it because we worked so hard to keep these rates down. We would still have all these buildings at 3.7 mils. If the value was still here. That's all that would be collected. 3.7 would have paid for all this value, all that debt. But the debt and the value has been pulled out of this community, so that you can no longer do that.
Sure. All right. I mean, I'm 3.43, I mean, even again. But I think there's a way to whittle down that list as well and kind of come up with
list so that we could see what our staff and the administrators felt we needed.
Yeah,
there's
some pretty need stuff in there. Need. And then there's some other things that were there because you're probably going to have to do it eventually.
I understand, but even if we were in good economic times, I would be very hesitant. I mean, I wouldn't even consider dropping a 3.43 on people. Without letting them know, I get that. So I think there's a reasonable middle ground in there somewhere, you know, that you can still get your stuff done, that positively has to be done. There'll be a minimum impact on your taxpayer, but there's got to be a give and take in there somewhere. And if it's the 1 mil that Andrea suggested, I don't think that's quite enough. I would have considered maybe 2, but if it's 1 and we get out and talk to our senior citizens, then that's what it is.
You said she's going to raise it a mil regardless?
I think she's going to have to.
That's what, yeah.
Because she has a legal obligation.
Right.
I mean, you could make any of that person, yeah. I suppose.
To me, one mil seems like looking at the collection rates. 1 mil looks like what would happen if we pulled up. I mean, at least 1 mil seems. You can go out to the community and say 1 mil is just is part of having bonds. I mean, when you have the bonds, they're collected at a lower rate. We need this to service our debt. You know. I feel like the waters are less muddy around 1 mil. You know what I mean? Maybe I'm not explaining myself very well.
No, I'm interested in that.
And maybe it's more, but I'm just saying that's where it starts to get murky for me. And I think 1 mil would get us through next year in looking at our situation.
Maybe more then.
Again, I don't feel good about doing it.
you're going to go before Moody's and Standard Poor's next fall. You know, if the conditions are correct,
right. To refinance those other bonds, right?
And what's your story? They may drop your rating because you haven't taken care of yourself.
Right.
So, and again, you may that bond coming due next fall may drop off the map too because bond rates may increase and, you know, it may not make sense to refinance. We've missed those windows. I mean, that window right now makes sense, but next fall it may not make sense. That window may move out. But that's when it's due to do that. Again, been in front of those guys enough that I know the stories and the questions and the probes that they're going to have for you. And, have you taken good enough care of your debt? Will be one of the things that they will probe hard. And how are you maintaining the facilities that you have?
So,
well, we aren't in any fear of not paying our debt. The guy from, well, I think it was Fifth Third, said, you know, that's not an issue at all.
Right, because we have the ability to raise the millage rate on our bonds. That's why he said that. He said that because, look, you still have the ability
I think he said something like, you know, don't misunderstand. There's no fear of it just not being paid.
No, we can pay our bonds. It's just how we choose to pay them. We could take all of our PI money and pay them off, or we could raise the rates on our bonds like we're talking about. What he's saying is you're not in a risk of defaulting, but the option is you have to decide what bucket you're going to pull that money out of to pay those bonds.
Yeah, and again, that is...
That's
exactly what he said, because you're not at risk. You can't ever be at risk, because legally you have to pay your debt.
And we have
so what is 1 mil money on a $100,000 home per year?
About 37. 1 mil is about $35-ish.
About 30. Once you take it to it, 12.5%.
Yeah, then you take 12.5%, a little bit.
Less than 30.
And I didn't realize Andrea had 3.43 in here, so $35.
Yeah, that'd be a big number. That would be 12 mils. I'm not sure we went.
Yeah, I'm about to
there.
Say, wow, where'd that number come from?
So I think what was sent to you as board that had the 1 mil from Andrea.
It had 3.43, and I thought it was 1 mil, so I took that.
No, I mean the resolution that was
right.
Always remember, log it away in your brain someplace. 1 mil is about $35, give or take.
That's easy to do.
And it just that's what it is. That's what it translates to be. And then if you add more than, you know, if you have 4 mils, then it's 35 times 4, basically, for every $100,000.
Okay, that's easy. I can do that without self-feed.
There you go.
So going back to these bonds, so looking at the one in 98, we never supplemented that with anything, right? Outside of the TPP.
I don't think we supplemented anything until 2005.
She's got on here the TPP reimbursement payment that I assume came with. I mean, she's got it, like...
They somebody just put it on here just so they could put it on one of them, is what they did.
She put it on all of them.
There wouldn't have been anything on, yeah, 98, yeah. There would have been no, yeah, TIF, and there would have been no...
But I think part of that big hole...
There would have been no PI.
That was based on her bond debt, right?
Right, it was
and
based
so
on...
And so she's probably attributing,
yeah,
so much of that.
Correct,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, just looking at those, if they were never supplemented, then I think one knows just by the normal order things is justified, but...
No, they were not to have been supplemented from what I read, and everything was the only one that would have been the 2005.
You wouldn't add to them because you were gaining,
yeah,
about 14%
exactly
worth of value every year, you know, mm-hmm, growth.
That was the was that 41 million, the TIF, the COP?
Yeah, the COPs.
Well, let's do something.
What do you think? I mean, I got one option on the table. I assume that's an option.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one mil?
What do you want to do?
I'd like to get closer to the three. I think I'd want to be, you know, two and a half.
Two?
Because I want to make sure that we, you know, we've got something in there so that if we do lose something, we've got some money. And if not, then, you know, that money will roll and move somewhere else. Inside the court.
Mr. Breaker?
I'm kind of not decided yet. It's got to be between a 1 and 2 for sure. I don't want to go to 3-4-3.
No. Mr. Greer?
I'm okay with 1.
Okay. Well, like I started out, I think 2, to me, I think 2 is a balance that seems to, you know, it still allows us to continue to run our operation, but it's minimal impact, I think. District. So however you want to work.
We're going to get hit for 1 anyway, regardless.
No, I mean, we'd have to do,
you're right, we would have to do 1 anyway. To your point, I think we should most definitely go out. You know, you're going to take your hit one way or another. You know, I'm okay with standing out there and explaining why, you know, why we did what we did. I have no problem with that. But moving forward, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen next year. We're going to have this exact same discussion next year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are. We're going to have it next year. We should be having it next year, but we're going to be in the same.
It eventually will have to go to 3.4.
Well, I just don't like the ideal that because we can, we do.
I don't.
But
I don't like that.
And I understand that it likely will have to be more. But we will have had the opportunity to go out into the community and talk to people about it.
Well, here's my, as I look at the schedules, and I don't necessarily agree that we're going to have to go to 3.43, because as I look at this, there's a, you know, if values for some reason go up, or if our tips go up, or whatever, you know, you're going to have to pull less out of, you know, you may not have to ask. You know, maybe next year you don't do anything, or maybe next year it's a half mil, or maybe next year you say, you know what? Well, not next year, maybe a couple years down the road, you can say, look, we can start bringing that back. But I think the point is focusing on what that ending balance is. You know, some of these had like $16 million in there for, mm-hmm, an ending balance. I mean, we're not gonna do that. So you bring that back down to, you figure out a way to get back down to that 1.5 is what you do. And I think maybe next year you ask for more, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't have to. Maybe you can maintain and look, and you go back and you look at your list of projects. And I know we've whittled them down, but I saw some things on that list of projects that, you know. You know, if you ask me, we don't necessarily would have to do. That's just my own opinion. I'm not an expert. But there's also some, you know, I mean, there's different things on that list that we can do. So my humbled opinion is that two for us would put us about where we need to be, at least for a year.
As long as we do not lose any more of the TPP replacement and PI.
Correct. I mean, because we stopped that, because if they decide to go on, we're going to lose another $500,000. Additional half a million,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
One will work, right? I mean, we're not, we've established that one will work. It's not as nice as two. One, it can be explained very easily with just the fact of how bonds work. So there's really no, you know, to go out into the community, that's a very good starter. You know, they may be upset at first if you increase it at all, but that's a good starter. And then explain the whole situation. And I think we need to really figure out a way to explain, because it really is. I mean, until Andrew showed up and broke the bonds out, we didn't even know how they broke out. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we really need to unravel this so people understand where we're at.
I understood them until about 3 years ago when they were all combined.
Yeah, that's, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think that's, to me, I'm comfortable with one. I'm not comfortable with it anymore.
Okay. I don't care how you want. I mean, we've you know, you got one. I got. What do you got there?
We need a compromise, then, don't we?
One and a half. I mean, it's either one, it's two, or it's one and a half. Whatever. I mean.
But I'm comfortable with one. I understand. And you don't need me to pass it any higher.
No. But you're part of the board, so I mean, I don't want to, I'm not going to discount and say, well, Doug just thinks one. I mean, I want to, trying to reach a compromise.
Right.
I mean, that's the objective.
But I think one was my compromise. I'd rather be a zero.
Well, I'd rather be a zero, too, so I don't think that's much of a compromise.
Well, honestly, I came in here thinking that's where I was going to be, zero. You're going to get a no vote on me on anything. But I can, the one makes sense. I feel like it can be explained. It takes, yeah. There's just a lot of reasons why. Okay with that.
Okay. Roy, would you go for one or two? If I threw one up, what are you going to say?
I'll vote for one.
John?
Well, I'm okay with one, but I'm also okay with two.
I understand, but I mean...
Yeah, I think I'm worried about the, you know, servicing the debt.
Sure.
And making sure that we maintain our facilities. I mean, and that's, you know, another $35 on a $100,000 house, and the values are going down, and, you know, people that, you know, have voted on this. I'm okay with that. I don't think we're doing a bait and switch or anything like that. This is something that's there, and it's part of the finance to because if we let the system not take care of itself, and you know the heat's out in whatever school or something of that nature, and we can't replace it, or the roof's gone, or you know something of that happens, then I think you're going to pay a little bit more from a communication standpoint, and if you're trying to explain that, we don't have anything in the coffer and we didn't prepare for that.
We're looking at a $3 million balance in PI at the end of FY12, and we're not. I mean, it's not like we're scraping like we are in operating right now.
Right.
So
and that's
bill,
even with
I
paying that debt.
Don't want to send an impression that we're...
Or at least according to this one.
Okay.
And by thread.
Yeah, because we're... On that one, it was like using 1.5 million of the PI to pay bond debt, and then we would still have 3 million left.
Okay.
You know, and that's still with.
So I'm gonna. So.
Having, you know, some improvements and money.
Well, I'm gonna let him. I mean,
anyone can.
What?
No,
I'm just saying. I'll make a comment. I'm gonna finish my thought real quick.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll go with one. But I would like commitments on this board then that we are going to go out and go to those groups. I mean, I'm going to, yes?
Yeah,
yes.
No, I agree. And
yes.
I think we ought to.
Yes,
do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm saying, I mean, if we're going to do that and we're going to say, well, we're not going to move this forward because no one knows about it and whatnot. Okay, well, then this board, damn sure better commit to get out there and do that and figure out how we're going
to
do that.
And I think we need to have a comprehensive plan to look at all of our financial things and decide how that fits in within it because, I mean, we have a lot of financial challenges facing us in a couple of years. So
that really?
Yeah. I think we shouldn't be dealing with it as, you know, one issue at a time. I think we should give them the full picture so they don't feel like they're getting hit from the left and the right. And
okay.
Oh, you're back again telling us about one month,
yeah.
Kind of thing.
Okay, so if I look at the resolution, I want to make sure that resolution has the, I don't, it's somewhere here. Somebody has it. It's got the 1 mil on there.
Someone can know. I print it out.
Is this the 1 mil? Is this the one that's in front of us that we're approving? Is that the same one? I just want to, where are we at here? On? So 384. No, this one does not have a 1 on it. Right? Right there. And that one? That's what I'm saying, looking right there. So. Alright, then I'm going to try to figure this out. I'm going to try to word this correctly, but then I'll just make the motion that we're going to approve our this bond and rating sheet that has an additional 1 mil for bond retirement. Is that right?
What's the bond?
For an effective rate of 54.36.
Because it's 1 mil over what we were.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Right. It's 1 mil. I mean. It's on the minute, so I mean, if
well, I didn't want it to come across
no,
like, well, Andrew is going to do it by 1 mil.
No, 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 no. Yeah. So I will make that motion. Oh, sorry, just handing it away. I need a second, please.
Second.
Moved in second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mady.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Breaker.
Yes.
Breaker.
Yes.
Mr. Lassner.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. On to impracticality.
Item 9 is impracticality of school transportation. You have a request there for several.
This is the last month for these?
Yes.
Second. Moved in second. Roll call, please.
Mr.
Greenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Mady?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Breaker?
Yes.
Mr. Lassner?
Okay, motion carries.
Item 10 is resolution to purchase 2 new school buses. You have the items in there. These are Bluebird buses with Cummins engines.
That always amazes me that they only give you $6,000 for that bus.
I'm thinking, man,
I could scrap. Could you scrap that thing for more than $6,000?
So is this definitely going to be 1?
You offering 7?
No. Well, if I had a band, maybe. You know.
So did you think about it for a second, what you would do with a bus?
I did, as a matter of fact. Sorry, go ahead.
Is this definitely going to be 184 and 172 passenger?
Yes.
And that's 84 little people.
Well, it depends if you have
elementary or... Well, it's 84 by definition of the
middle
transit.
School.
I know. But on those buses, but you're not going to get 84 high schoolers in that bus.
Well, you're not going to get 84 little people in there either, so. Because little people aren't little people.
No.
We looked at 284s, but, you know, some of the neighborhoods where these will go, 70 and 84 passenger won't fit. It doesn't go up and down the streets as well.
All right, second. Moved in second. Sorry.
No, that's right. What's the 1,800 per bus? What is the extended warranty?
It just buys you extended time on the...
I know, but what is that?
So, like, drivetrain? You mean, like, drivetrain?
Well,
or?
I mean, if I got an extended warranty, I'd know it's 3 more years or 100,000 miles.
I don't know exactly what it is.
We've always gotten them. I mean, they've always...
Free oil changes for 10 years.
I think it depends on the actual parts of the bus, but I really don't know, Roy, what the extended time is, whether it's a year and on certain items, because I think you can buy multiple of these extended warranties.
Well, $1,800 isn't very much for... I know if I bought an extended warranty on just a regular vehicle, it would be... a lot more than that for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so,
it would.
Okay. Like I said,
I guess they don't break much. I'll let you know, but I don't know the number.
Covers all the power windows.
I'm just curious.
And the seatbelts and power windows.
I'm just curious is all. I'm okay with it. I just.
All right. Moving second. Roll call.
Mrs. Greer.
Yeah.
Mr. Mady.
Yes.
Mr. Breaker.
Yes.
Mr. Reinberg.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 11, two resignations. I recommend that you accept both of them.
So moved.
Second. Moving second. Roll call.
Mr. Freudberg.
Yes.
Mr. Mady.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Baker.
Yes.
Mr.
Item 12 is employment of student district staff. You have in there student light and sound technicians. You have two employ.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. Roll call.
Squier.
Yes.
Mr. Rosenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Baker.
Yes.
Lassner.
Yeah. Yes, motion carries.
Item 13, supplemental contracts outlined below are specific recommendations related to employment of certificated and non-certificated individuals for supplemental positions. And you have a list there. All these are what we had last year with reductions.
Yeah. Sean, left fully.
I have concern about that wrestling coach.
Oh, there you are. Like you moved. I was like, man, I do is you wait all this time.
I had to lean against the wall. Been working too hard on the house, buddy.
That's 2 out of 3 if you don't pass it.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Manning.
Yes.
Gordonberg.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, motion carries.
District substitutes and home instructors listed below are substitutes and home instructors recommended for employment for the 11-12 school year on an as-needed basis.
So moved.
Second.
Mm-hmm. Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Breaker.
Yes.
Mr. Moody.
Yes. Motion carries.
Item 15, student teacher is recommended that the following student teacher be approved. This is actually just someone doing the job shadowing, just would be a high school student.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Moody.
Yes.
Mr. Breaker.
Yes.
Mr. Boyer. Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 16, the district volunteers. It's recommended that you, we recognize the following volunteers for the 11-12 school year.
Second. Move and second. Roll call.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Breaker.
Yes.
Freudenberg.
Yes.
Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Item 17 is a request for approval of fundraiser for Creekview PTO.
So get your wrapping paper and chocolates.
After you've just gone to the Yankee Camp.
So moved. Second. Moved in second. Bye, John.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Baker.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 18, donation to the district. You have several of the elementaries received school supplies from United Way and Navin, Northwood, and CQ, and high school from other organizations there. So
moved.
Second.
Moving second. Second. Roll call, please.
Well, you guys are doing
it. Mr. Breaker.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Mady.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
And item 21, we'll go out of order here a little bit.
It's on your back page.
Yeah. We have two district staff there to employ. One is a network support technician. This would actually be replacing someone who resigned last or 2 months ago in our tech support. And then one is for Lasky.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Baker.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Lasky.
Yes.
Is that first
case? Motion carries.
Jeremy, is he currently working here and or temporary or anything, or is it just somebody hiring from the outside right into that?
He came. He actually came from the Lima area.
Hmm.
Had some experience in that. Lots of experience. Actually.
I was gonna say some. We're really troubled.
He had lots.
All right, I'm going to open up to public participation one more time. Anybody that's left would like to address the board?
The lady that left.
Oh, thank you very much. You're a good man. Thank you.
I just hope that as you guys go out in the community to talk about the 1% increase and you deliver the message that you had the potential to raise it 3.43 and you made a responsible decision to raise it 1, but that whatever you guys say you do as a uniform board, I would really hope that the message that comes from all five of you is the same and that it expresses our need as a community and where we're at financially, because I think it is a bleak picture
and there's no sugarcoating it or changing it around that's going to change that. So I just hope that you guys are united as five, because I'm okay with dialogue and conversation, but you know, you were elected to represent our community and our schools, and I just hope that you're uniform in your message.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? All right, then we're going to go into executive session at, really? 9:47. I move we go into executive session.
Second.
Move to second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker.
Yeah.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yeah.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, we are in executive session. Stop.